Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling, OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
And be the man.
You gotta be the man.
Whoa. It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
And this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki?
It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Can't see nothing coming up behind. Make my way through this darkness. I can't feel nothing but this chain that binds me. Lost track of how far I've gone. How far I've gone, how high I've climbed. On my back's a 60-pound stone. On my shoulder, half mile line. Come on up the horizon. Come on up with your hands in mine. Come on up the horizon. Come on up the horizon tonight. Left the house this morning. Bells are ringing.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Online World of Wrestling Radio. Give me a second here, because that song always makes me cry because of the significance of it. This is the first time I've ever done a radio show after the second worst day of my life. The worst being the day my grandmother died. Being a native New Yorker, September 11th, means more to me than the average person does, because, as I said on CB Radio Saturday night, which Spug and Subway, who amazingly I never knew worked for IBW Hardcore, we had an awesome conversation about it. Yeah, it's Springsteen night. As I said last week, to celebrate my birth month, you're going to be forced to listen to my favorite artists. I've had Depeche Mode, and this week it's Boss. Can't go wrong with the Boss and the rest of the crew from Jersey. And that song is off an album called The Rising, which is actually written about the aftermath of September 11th. This isn't going to be a downer episode, hell no. We're not gonna be a downer night. This is actually also NWA night, because not only do we have during the 11 o'clock hour, the owner, executive producer, creator, and one of the creative minds in the National Wrestling Alliance and their new program called NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, which you will be able to see on NWAHollywood.com and NWAWrestling.com. His name is David Marquez. That name sounds familiar. He was also involved in Wrestling Society X. He was also involved with New Japan Pro Wrestling. So if you've always wanted to ask questions about working for the Inokis or anywhere else, he is the man to do it with. Tonight also, we are humbled and honored this past week due to him being a dad and also being on the West Coast. We had to do a pre-tape interview during the 10 o'clock hour with a first for me. I've interviewed the NWA World Tag Team Champions on a couple occasions. I interviewed Simon Diamond and Johnny Swinger, and I interviewed America's Most Wanted and Triple X in different incarnations when they had the belts. But I've never interviewed a reigning singles world champion. So during the 10 o'clock hour, you will have an interview with the current reigning NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, who was exclusive to us. And Sir Rockin's jaw hit the floor a couple times because we were both going like, he's not going to talk about Ring of Honor. And if fans know who Adam Pearce is, that don't realize, oh, he's a former world champion. He was recently the creative mind of Ring of Honor until Kerry Silkin made a creative change and moved to Delirious. Unfortunately, we also have to open with some bad news, and in a couple minutes we will be joined by the Spud guy from that amazing show, Wrestle Talk Radio, which this Sunday is actually 11 o'clock, because we'll be addressing the Night of Champions pay-per-view tonight. There will be some TNA talk, not much, because, hey, they didn't have a show last week. The sad news came out, former WWE and WCW superstar Mike Shaw passed away at the age of 53. Now, you may not know who he is by that name, but if you're a fan of WCW in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, you may remember a character called Norman the Lunatic. Don't call him Lunatic because you make him mad. It was actually one of Teddy Long's first managing gigs after he turned into the heel referee after, I think it was Clash Champions 6 in New Orleans when he screwed the Road Warriors out of the World Tag Team titles. And they lost to the Varsity Club of Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Mike Rotundo. Mike also appeared for a while with the WWEF, whatever, as Bastion Booger. And this came out of Mexico. This is a really weird one. A gentleman named Arturo Casco, who was one of the biggest pro wrestling stars in Mexico under the stage name of La Fiera, passed away at age of 49. He was actually stabbed 5 times. And died in a hospital in the early 80s. He was often referred to as the best worker in Mexico. When Mitsuru Masawa made his debut as Tiger Mask in 1984, he actually handpicked this gentleman to be his opponent. He unfortunately had some major drug issues in his career and had a long stint in jail in the 90s. So that we wish both of their families a very well-to-do. If you live in Florida and aren't busy on Saturday the 18th, we had Howard Brody on a couple weeks ago to address the passing of one of his friends, Luna Vachon, and last Tuesday they had a very nice function over on the east coast of Florida. If you live in the Tampa area, you can go to the Faith Community Center Church, which is 16902 Shady Hills Road. You can MapQuest that. This Saturday at 1 p.m., there will be a public memorial service for friends, family. Anyone that wants to come out can come on out and be a part of that. So, like I said, this isn't going to be a downer. I got my 9/11 thing out of the way, even though I'm sure there's people going, shut up about 9/11, fine, we'll be quiet. And there goes a home run, and the Yankees are now losing 7-6. Yay, rookie pitcher. As I was watching a very nice game.
Go Rays, baby! Go Rays!
Shut up. Yeah. That's the Spud guy. He not only is involved on the Sunday night show here, he's also a part of Utaku Talk Live, which is tomorrow night, 9 o'clock. And, he joins us here tonight.
God, I hope the Yankees go into the cellar.
Hey, it's only the fifth inning. Hey, last night it took them forever, both teams forever to score one frickin' run between CC Sabathia and Price.
Hey,
and
I'm clicking it's not Sabathia, it's Sabathia.
It's world champion because he couldn't do that where he was before.
It's because he choked.
Oh. Speaking of weird stuff, we're going to get into some legal stuff. This came out today from the Connecticut Post. A spokesman for Stanford-based World Wrestling Entertainment confirmed today that the company is being audited by state officials for classifying its wrestlers and the other behind-the-scenes production talent as independent contractors. Let me read this, and then Spug gets free rein, because being a independent contractor himself for many years in the world of professional wrestling. I'm sure this is going to be interesting to hear. The company's treatment of its wrestlers has come under increased scrutiny since former CEO Linda McMahon entered the U.S. Senate race. WWE spokesman Robert Zimmerman said in an email to the Connecticut Post, WWE has always complied with the law. Up until this election, WWE has not been fined nor investigated in the past for independent contractor classification. However, curiously, the state of Connecticut is currently conducting an audit of WWE's classification of independent contractors. WWE constantly reviews its internal practices and procedures to comply with ever-changing laws. But Mr. Zimmerman did not provide other details, such as the agency that is in charge of these audits. Now, earlier this year, both Democratic President Barack Obama's administration and the Attorney General of Connecticut, Richard Blumenthal, the Democratic nominee against Linda McMahon for the U.S. Senate, pledged to crack down on companies that misclassify their employees. In a statement, Blumenthal said he was not aware of an audit into the World Wrestling Entertainment Organization and said his office would not be directly involved in conducting such an investigation. He has also added complaints about employers misclassifying workers to avoid taxes or health care or other obligations are typically filled with the Department of Labor, filed with the Department of Labor, which then does investigations. The Department of Labor spokesperson did not get back to the folks at the company, at the Connecticut Post, and neither did the staff writer who wrote this piece to us. His name is Brian Lockhart. We asked Mr. Lockhart to appear. He declined our offer. Companies often rely on independent contractors to fill out their full and part-time talent pools because they don't have to pay certain taxes or provide certain benefits. Now, you being a wrestler for many years, you are independent. Now, if this is where it gets tricky, because the first thing that popped to my mind and Sorokin's mind, because we were chatting in between TV shows today and my daughter trying to attack the computer, soon to be 2 years old, she thinks she can blog and everything. The first thing that came up in our mind was the lawsuit that was filed by Raven, Cannon, and Mike Sanders, who were all released and then filed a suit in the Stanford Norwalk Superior Court that they were claiming that they should be categorized as employees and WWE breaches his contract by not withholding federal taxes from paychecks and Social Security and da-da-da. So, obviously, at least in my mind, and I don't know about Spug or the listeners, this has got... The race in Connecticut getting that ridiculous that instead of talking about wrestling matches, we're talking about this? Or is this something that should be brought to the front? Because you see people like Matt Hardy, who we'll talk about in a few minutes, or Hulk Hogan, who's have so much back problems that he's bagging it, keeps it back in Clearwater, Florida's hospitals again. Should WWE actually, you know, be taking, I know they're taking care of these people, Spug, because you get injured in a WWE ring. Look at Darren Drozdoff. His bills were paid for.
His bills were paid for. But what do they call themselves now?
Which part? You mean the sports entertainers or WWE itself?
They're not wrestlers. They don't call themselves wrestlers anymore. They're entertainers.
Yeah.
And they are continually talking about longest running weekly episodic television program in history and so on and so forth. This is only opening up the door for people for wrestlers in the WWE and TNA for that matter to join SAG.
Oh, of course. And it's funny you bring that up, because John Cena, believe it or not, I believe is a member of the Screen Actors Guild, and so is Dwayne Johnson, and so is Mick Foley. I think Rob Van Dam is, because once you do a movie or TV show, you're in their union, dude. Mick Foley said it in his book, one of the books that he wrote, that he had the most amazing health coverage because of being in the Screen Actors Guild, which
they're
is...
only... Here's the thing.
Yeah,
WWE,
which is a union.
Vince wants to continue to call them independent contractors. He still wants to do it by old wrestling standards, but he wants to gloss over the ugly parts of everything else.
Exactly.
And
that's
you can't have it both ways, because all it's going to take is another lawsuit or someone with a hair up their ass to actually investigate the WWE's business practices and actually go over their books and their financial contracts and things like that and say, you know what, you should be a part of the Screen Actors Guild because you're doing everything as if you were a television show, but you're trying to find the loophole to get around it, and it's not going to work. Because
including calling your show a season premiere last night.
Exactly, because eventually Vince is going to get caught with his pants down.
Except it won't be as a part of the show. It'll be for real.
Exactly.
He won't be standing there with Tori Wilson going, hey, look at my box. Oh, the camera's here.
Exactly.
This is a weird situation because you're not provided under WWE from what we read during the Scott Levy, Chris Kouklakis, and Mike Sanders lawsuit that there is no health insurance like a Humana, an Aflac, Aetna. It's impossible to do. If you read Bret Hart's book, you heard about his battle with Lloyd's of London over the years. Now, we did some digging into, we found some law briefs about this subject from the original attorney to Raven Canyon and Mike Sanders, a gentleman named David Golub, G-O-L-U-B, not Gollum, like the creepy character from the Lord of the Rings movies. He alleged that because a wrestler should be categorized as employers, WWE breached its contract by not withholding federal taxes from paychecks. There's also a matter of Social Security and Medicaid taxes not being paid. The federal tax questions are the reason why the case was moved to federal court back in the late 2000 of this past decade. He also claimed unjust enrichment because WWE did not provide wrestlers with the benefits that come with being classified as an employee, such as health care, paid sick time, and vacation. In seeking class action status, he was asking for compensatory damages for benefits denied to the wrestlers. Victorious, the lawsuit could change the way the company does business. Now, obviously, the suit was thrown out, but this is the part that I wanted to get and get Spug's reaction and the room's reaction. Now, you got to remember, this is 2008, so they may or may not have changed stuff since then. Generally speaking, wrestlers negotiate separate contracts with each professional wrestling association,
hey,
by which, obviously, at that time, WWE was the largest.
Listen, not everybody can hear like the Micro Machine Man speaks. You got to slow it down a little bit, buddy. I'm trying to follow you so I can actually talk about what you're talking about.
Okay, I'll try to slow it down for you.
Just a little bit.
It's the New Yorker in me. I'm barely up 7'6", so my nerves are probably going da 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 da. Okay, this is from the brief that Richard Gall, a gentleman by the name of Richard Gray from Wrestling News World, claimed. The entry-level guaranteed contract in WWE is worth about $25,000 annually. Now, we're going to stop for a second there because I'm going to take a gander that's probably your FCW kids are maybe getting $25,000. Now, he also claims that there are, now this we do know from people that we've interviewed that have worked for WWE, and I have personally met that have worked for WWE and TNA. There are bonuses for appearances, being on Monday Night Raw, being on SmackDown. There are pay-per-view event benefits. Obviously, there's big payouts for WrestleMania. Now, Jim Cornette claimed that for WrestleMania 10 in the Garden, he got 10 grand. For a manager, hey, that's not bad. Obviously, you also get a cut of merchandise sales, such as DVD royalties. If you get a shirt, you get an action figure, you get whatever merchandise-wise. Now, he also says some of the high-profile wrestlers have their travel expenses paid for, which is true. I actually believe the majority of WWE talent will be flown wherever. They'll cover that, but they don't cover your trans on the ground, and the cost of your hotel. Hence why Mick Foley in his books was saying that him and DDP and all these other people were clamoring five to a room. So the IRS, of course, provides guidance to employers regarding classification of workers, including how to determine much control is in the hands of employers from behavior and financial standpoints. The obvious thing here is, I'm listed as an independent contractor. Remember the word independent here, guys, for a second, because we're going to compare two companies real quick. I work for TNA Wrestling. Let's say I'm Jesse Neal, for an example, because he works here in Florida on the indie scene. He just won the Vintage Heavyweight Championship at Vintage Wrestling in Orlando. Back in 2002, when TNA was founded, they were set up that you could do the Wednesday night pay-per-view, and TNA Wrestling didn't care where else you worked. So you could hypothetically work when Thursday night in Evansville, you could work Friday, Saturday, wherever. Then when the pay-per-view scheme came in, and then the DVD sales started going, they made these guys sign deals that, yes, you can go and work a certain place. We're going to take 10% of the booking money you're getting. We're going to use that for your ticket, for your trans and hotel. We'll take care of that. Then now there's deals such as I can go work for Pro Wrestling Guerrilla in California, but I can't appear on their DVD because now I'm in direct competition with TNA Wrestling. And that was the thing with ROH for a while. I could work at Ring of Honor, but I can't work on your Glory by Honor pay-per-view like we had this weekend. Or I could work it, but I can't appear.
Let's take the word independent contractor out of this, okay?
Okay.
Because independent, it's far from it. If you work for TNA or WWE, your name should be slave. Quite honestly. Because think about it. You're not given benefits. You're not given health care. Your travel expenses are paid as far as getting you to and from the city you're supposed to be at. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You are not allowed to go seek work elsewhere. If work is drying up in WWE or TNA, you're not allowed to appear on lucrative DVDs or lucrative events. You're not allowed to have merchandise for other companies. Last time I checked, an independent contractor was allowed to seek work elsewhere.
Right. And that's where the problem is.
If I'm a plumber, okay, I can go do a job for Mrs. Johnson down the street on Friday and then go do a job for Mrs. Smith right next door to her on Monday. I'm not beholden to Mrs. Johnson. It's absolutely ridiculous. You know, I hope that out of this, that WWE and TNA are forced to join the Screen Actors Guild.
Wish it was that one.
Or form some sort of union.
Well, Jesse Ventura tried that in the 80s. He claimed about it. That was one of the reasons why he got into issues with Hulk Hogan and all that kind of stuff. So it's not going to be a dead issue, I guarantee. After the election in November, one way or another, we're going to be in this issue. The other funny thing that happened on the way to this week's show was I don't twit, I don't tweet, I don't twang, I don't have one of those funky HD cameras, I don't have one of those things. Apparently Matt Hardy does, and he's got a lot of free time because if you saw it all over the internet, Matt was supposedly sent home. Then he claimed on his stuff that he claims that I'm in England. He showed a video. I'm in England. Look, they spell it with an R-E at the end. I must be overseas. No, look outside. I must... They're driving on the left side of the road. I'm just going. Okay, dude, you have way too much free time, man. So, in this video, guys, and I think Rock can probably... I'm sure if you're a member of the OWW Genesis board, there's a big thread that's now been stickied or tagged or whatever the hip kids call it. Showing this video, where he goes on in his hotel room for about 3-4 minutes... and addresses that he's apparently had intestinal issues, that his lower intestines ruptured, or his large intestines ruptured. I know pretty much some anatomy here, but I don't know the anatomy that well. So you be the judge, because this Sorokin is a twit person. I'm not calling Sorokin a twit, but he does the twit. Because he twits the OWW stuff and the Wrestle Talk Radio stuff. This came from Matt Hardy himself. And this is really cryptic, kids, because we haven't heard anything from the big office in Stamford. I appreciate all of the things the WWE has done for me in the past. They have been gracious to me, but now it's decision time for me. Thanks, all. Okay. We're going to take a break in a minute here, because I want everybody to ponder that. Just think about it, people of the chat room, people listening on OWW Radio. Think about it. Are we going to see a reforming of the Hardy Boys? Possibly in 90 days? I don't know. We're gonna come back. Believe it or not, Man for Man stole this song in the 70s. This is actually Bruce Springsteen doing Blinded by the Light. It's off of their first album, Greetings from Hasbury Park. Yeah, the same move Bam Bam Bigelow used to use. We'll be back on the other side of this break on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Spud Guy may or may not join us. He's having some technical issues. And don't forget, David Marquez, 11 p.m., the world champ, the NWA world champ, Adam Pearce, 10 o'clock. We'll be back.
I'm pleasing, sneezing, and wheezing. The calliope crashed to the ground. Some old hot ass shot was hit for a hot spot, snapping his fingers, slapping his hand. In some flesh, wild mask, I was tied to a lover's knot with a whatnot in her hand. A tender spot and throws his lover in the sand. Then some bloodshot, forget me not, whisper daddies with an earshot, save the buckshot, turn up the band. Yes, she was blinded by the light. Oh, cut loose like a deuce, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light. She got down, but she never got tight, but she'll make it.
Here's a quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show! So tune in! Listen! I demand it.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talents today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today,
Rob Van
stand.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage. Brett
Berry. Janice Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man.
Paul Hogan, the quickest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Woogerman.
And tomorrow.
TJ Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling. Online. It's the site for Pro Juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
This is Mace with an announcement from the head of the Wild Talk Radio Network. With the goal in mind to keep ratings as high as they are with DJ Tim Stein and DJ Sir Rockin', the Wild Talk Radio Network hereby releases Maverick and Nick from the network. Just kidding, guys. This is the Wild Talk Radio Network, where friends get together to have fun and make fun of Mav.
Hey everyone, this is Sir Rocket, the host of CB Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait, Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of CB Radio?
I kinda did just call me the host of CB Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey! I'm not just the producer, I am the host of this.
Oh my god, shut up! Everyone knows that I am the host of CB Radio, which you can check out Saturday nights, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, Rock.
Yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy.
This is Lacey Von Erich. You're listening to The Network, Tim Steinbilt, Wild Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, again, and welcome to the Wild Talk Radio Network. The show, Online World of Wrestling Radio, is also sponsored by Underground Radio. They're the cats that take care of our 800 number, which is 877-588-9877. You can dial option 1. And you can also visit one of our other really cool sponsors, which is Click Wrestle. They are a video-on-demand service. We're going to be getting some commercials from them folks back in a few weeks here, and welcome back to Springsteen Night on Online World of Wrestling Radio. The Spud guy had to take care of some personal business, and we appreciate him hanging out with us for the little bit. I had to go to the annals of time to get the God of Gods from Wrestle Talk Radio, from Fire on Ice, and I do believe he also works as DJ Heartbreaker, to join us for a little bit till our Adam Pearce interview will be Tim Stein joining us.
Wow.
And also joining me, long time listener, first time caller, who had the lucky privilege of coming to Wrestling for a Cause with me this past Friday night. And we walk in and my friend Mike Ligori, who's going to be joining us in a second, jaw hits the floor when we're standing there talking, and all of a sudden in walks most beautiful Canadian woman on the planet. No, not Trish Stratus. Former TNA knockout, Tracy Brooks. And we had some fun that night, didn't we, Mike?
Oh, yeah. Lucky is an understatement.
Yeah, we had to explain to our, my wife, his girlfriend. It's like, yeah, we here's why we smell like perfume. And it's like photo A, me and her. Photo B, Mike and her. And thanks to over the 400-plus that came out for us for a cause this past weekend, money went right to the Town and Country Packers, which is a PAL youth football team. Go to wrestlingforacause.org, all one word, no spaces. They've got events the 25th and 26th in the Orlando area. Mike's on here because last night he watched Monday Night Raw live while I'm watching the Jets get annihilated on national television, and texts me during the Vince Russo Memorial Raw Roulette and says, so Chris Jericho just saved TJ Wilson's life. And I'm like, okay, interesting tweet there, text there. Put on Monday Night Raw this morning through the DVR and found out why, because if you watch the show, you saw what I've never understood, doing crazy spots like that in a cage. And Mike's a wrestling fan. Tim's been in the business for years as a promoter, as a TV personality, and doing the shows on the Wrestle Talk Radio and the other previous endeavors. Explain to me, why the heck is that kind of a spot being done on a Monday Night Raw, man?
No clue. It was cool. It would have been cool to see a Hurricane Rana come off the top rope of the cage, you know, standing and whatnot. And it just looked like it was going to be, you know, nothing but trouble from the get-go, because you saw TJ kind of stumbling on the rope. And once I saw him go down, I for the one split second, I thought we were going to see a tragedy on live television. And I just see Jericho grab his leg, TJ, you know, brace himself a little bit with his forearms hitting the mat, but his head hit, his head was like literally inches from the floor, and I stopped it. You know, my girlfriend Liz wasn't looking at it, and I had to rewind it and said, wow, he literally just saved his life. And I was texting you, like, literally on the JFK rewind, back into the left, back into the left.
And now, for fans that aren't aware of it, last night was Raw Roulette Night, which is a holdover from 3 years ago, and Eric Bischoff was still around, and they blamed Bischoff for it a few years ago. To Tim for a second here, we're known for TNA doing this to us with gimmick matches of contracts on a pole and caskets lowering from the roof. But to do an entire Monday Night Raw before your go-home pay-per-view, pretty risky move, isn't it?
Well, you want to do what you can to draw the crowd in. And it's the go-home pay-per-view. You want to draw as many viewers as you can, get as much hype and interest in your upcoming pay-per-view as you possibly can. So you're going to pull out a couple of stops. It just makes sense.
And believe me, they pulled him out. We found out that John Morrison not only is a very good wrestler, but he's into the parkour craze. Could this be possibly a new WWE Films project? I think it's funny. We could possibly have that. That would be funny. Like, hey, look at that. He's doing flips. Go ahead, man.
I watched on a DVD the John Morrison Rockstar thing that came out earlier in the year, and they showed footage after footage of him just going all around the arena before, you know, they let the people in, and he's jumping off of walls, and no wonder why he's in such great shape. That's all I can say.
Now, as we said, this pay-per-view, once again, is not 100% complete.
It's also not 100% Night of Champions either, like it used to be.
Well, what are you going to do? You as of right now, this is the matches. The six-pack now elimination challenge is the world, sorry, can't call them world champions, the WWE champ, Sheamus versus Wade Barrett versus Randy Orton versus Edge versus Chris Jericho versus the guy whose movie in many people's minds tanked. Kind of hard to tank when you're in a limited release, kids. Namely, John Cena. Also on this pay-per-view, the world champion, sorry, world heavyweight champion, Ray doesn't have the belt, so we can call him heavyweight again, Kane versus Undertaker. The U.S. champ, The Miz, gets to kiss the belt goodbye, we hope, to American Dragon Daniel Bryan. The first of what looks like to be many unification matches. One of the members of Lay Cool will wrestle Melina and those fuzzy Bruiser Brody Tracy Brooks Memorial boots. We don't have a match for the Intercontinental Championship yet. We don't have opponents for the Hart Dynasty. So let me get this right. Your pay-per-view right now is four matches long, possibly six if you get it somebody for Kofi. Sorry, you get somebody for Dolph Ziggler, maybe Kofi for the 83rd time, and you need opponents for the Hart Dynasty. Possibly we could throw Spug and Mason there, since Tim's got him in timeout for making fun of a certain body part. Oh, Sorokin is saying they already have announced Kofi versus Dolph. Okay, I apologize.
They also announced Big Show versus CM Punk, like I was just, you know, alluding to. It's not a full night of champions.
God, that's the annoying part. We're night of champions. Maybe not all champions.
Yeah, night of champions and Big Show and Punk.
Yeah. And, of course, we had a sit. I didn't get to sit through it because I was on the porch last weekend and didn't have the TV on. So I didn't get to watch episode one of season three's NXT. Got to watch it thanks to having Universal HD and tuned in to, if Mace were here, Mace would probably use some colorful language, but since we're PG rated on here, I'll just call it what it really was. I'm sorry. I have the utter respect for Jamie Keys, Naomi Knight, AJ, also known as Miss April from USW, Caitlin, who replaced Isis, Oksana, and Maxine Liviana, whoever she is. But I'm not interested at all. And according to Matt Stryker, Tim, and Mike, and listeners, 3 months of this is coming. Mm. Now, to Tim, because he's been in the business and he's seen a lot in his travels. Did WWE look and see how good Shimmer DVDs are selling and WSU is doing and the atrocity that was Wrestlicious and go, now everybody's making their money. Maybe it's time for us to get the girls out there again.
Well, you know, when you're marketing something, there is no way in hell you're going to ignore any potential competition. You can be guaranteed, despite what anybody might say, they've got eyes everywhere. You know, you got people saying in WWE, oh, we don't pay attention to TNA because they're not competition. You know, they've got like 10 people sitting around watching it and paying attention to what they're doing. Either to steal some good genesis of an idea or to make sure they don't do something that's really crappy. And so, you know, they're making money. Why don't we copy that formula, see what we can come with on our own?
As a fan, Mike, and I know you work for a prominent movie theater here in Tampa, so you see people, you have people that work with you that are wrestling fans. Is anybody really interested in this? Or would we rather have seen a season three with certain people like the current FCW heavyweight champion Mason Ryder or Xavier Woods, the former Consequences Creed, or Ricky the Dragon Steamboat's son, Richie, who's come back from a knee injury? Are you fine with this girls thing as a fan, or are you going, I don't want this?
Honestly, I really don't want this. I mean, you know, it's going to be a waste of a season. I would have liked to see, you know, a new batch of guys. But I also would have liked to see a whole batch of tag teams too, to be quite honest, because, you know, but with them unifying the tag belts and, you know, hopefully they'll start doing some of the tag team division like TNA is doing. TNA's got the tag team division. If I were Vince, I'd be looking at the TNA product going, maybe I might need to step up elsewhere other than, you know, having just all the singles competitors. You know, throw a couple of people together as teams, you know, even if it's you know, like four or five teams, maybe, you know, boost the season a little bit, you know, and give the tag division a little bit of a spotlight.
That way
the Hart Dynasty has competition and not the Usos who come out of nowhere, get a title shot, and boom, back to jobbing to Kali.
Yeah. Or the Dude Busters who are up and then disappear completely. You mentioned TNA having a great tag division. Well, they didn't have TV this week, but oh baby, were they in the news because of a certain big sexy giant killer. That's right. You want to know why I don't have Twitter? Because we apparently have found out that Twitter and alcohol don't mix, kids. Stay with me because this gets fun. I'm going to piece a little bit of this because, wow, there's some potty mouth coming out of the big sexy Kevin Nash. During his many Twitter tirades from, I believe we found this out Friday, as Mike and I were packing up to go to wrestling for a cause, all this jumped off. Now, he's claiming that he would be working out of his contract, so his final day would appear to be the Bound for Glory 10-10-10 event, when they show up. Really, I wish they would show up. Just so we could show up and go, look, it's day. All right, moving on. He notes in his very crazy rambling that his contract ends on the 12th of October. He actually, and I said, there's some profanity-laced stuff here, so I'm going to try to piece through it. Here's some of the stuff that made chat rooms and all that World of Wrestling radio go nuts. Also, if you're in the OWW Genesis chat, this was all over the place. He claims RVD and Hardy said they're rock stars. In my prime, I was selling out 30,000 seat plus domes. They can't draw 1,000 on the road. FTW. I will work out my TNA contract and see what life brings to me. My fans, I love you. Words can never explain what you mean to me. To the haters, I was glad to be able to be there to dump on for you to dump on me to make you feel better about your effed up lives. Going to take some time off Twitter. We'll still read tweets. Just need to decompress away from the wrestling world. He goes off on Jason Hervey, that Jason Hervey made him tweet that, guess you have to stay tuned for Impact for the answers about what the 10-10-10 thing is. When he's asked if he's leaving TNA, says no, moving on. When asked about his contract, deal is up October 12th, midnight, then no one can F with me. When brought up that he's 51 and his career should be over, it's fake, dumb bleep. Put 50K on the line and see who beats me. Now hurry the short bus, just pulled up outside. There's so much to go with here. Let's go with him selling out 30,000 arenas. Now, I'm 36. I'm old enough to have lived in the prime of the NWO and all of that stuff. Kev saying that he was selling out these buildings. Yes, so Kev's basically saying the entire WCW roster, which included Sting, Hall, Hogan, Luger, Goldberg, a certain Nature Boy. They didn't do Jack. He apparently is the one who brought 30,000 to these buildings.
Weren't they giving away tickets too?
For a while they might have been.
WCW's push, they were giving out tickets.
Yeah. But according to Big Kev, he's pulling 30K in the buildings. Now, he is right about RVD and Jeff Hardy with the 1,000, but it depends what city you go to. I mean, their biggest crowd to date, I believe, was the one in Coney Island, New York, which was close to 7 to 8. they're still, unfortunately, going, TNA is still going with the mindset that, yes, we're as big as WWE, but we're not going to those big arenas yet. We're going to go to Hammerstein Ballroom like they're going to do next weekend, or the ECW Arena like they're going to do also next weekend. Alcohol-fueled? Maybe. Believe he claimed something about me and Red alone again. It's just one of those situations, and I'll let Tim chime in. The word that comes to mind is sad.
Well, let me just ask you this much. Let me ask you this much. If I'm interrupting, tell me that I started talking before I should have. But if Nash is selling out 30,000 seat arenas, you know, and good luck on that, then during the pay-per-views and the Impact tapings where he has headlined and main evented those particular shows, how come those 30,000 people weren't in attendance?
I remember being at a pay-per-view where him and Jarrett were the main event. He may be referring to his time in WWE and in WCW, which then, unfortunately, if you go to the WWE era, and once again, I'm of the right age, Mike is a little off on the age, but he knows enough about it. Go back to Kevin Nash's WWF. Yes, I used the F. Deal with it. They're gonna sue any minute. 94 till he won the belt November of 94, Madison Square Garden, and held it for a decent amount of time. I don't remember him selling joints out. I remember hearing the exact opposite during his WWF title reign of 94 through 95. WrestleMania 11 was in Hartford, Connecticut, which was maybe less than a 20,000 seat arena. 94 King of the Ring wasn't exactly in a 50,000 seat arena. So it's just very weird to hear somebody go off like that. Now, if it's a work and it's going into the whole storyline that him and Sting and Jarrett have been going with, cool. Then he just used what WWE's been doing for the while. Before we go get back into here, Sorokin got more from the twitting, from the Matt Hardy files. He says, when the time is right, I'll put everything out there as far as what quote unquote really went down. I know I have to protect me and my brand, and I will. So that basically sounds like he's adios muchachos. Now, I don't know if they taped the SmackDown overseas to air this Friday or not, or if they're doing SmackDown tonight somewhere. I don't happen to have WWE's chart. Oh, they are taping right now. Okay, thanks, Sorokin. And so, yeah, bye-bye, Matt Hardy, and the 90-day clock will begin on you for the second time. And we all know what happened the first time. We also want to, before we go to break, congratulate a friend of ours here on the network and someone I've known for several years, in Roderick Strong. It was determined, you knew it was coming because Tyler Black is gone. He's now Mr. FCW, as I think they call him during the Glory by Honor show. Roderick Strong, the Messiah of the Backbreaker, is now the ROH World Heavyweight Champion. But his celebration was cut short by the return of the notorious 187 Homicide, who I believe is already guaranteed a title shot at their next iPay-per-view. The other matches included the Kings of Wrestling actually defeating the wrestling's greatest tag team, which is Haas and Benjamin. You also had the double chain match, Generico and Cabana taking out Steen and Carino. The World TV Champion, Eddie Edwards, took out Sean Daivari. The Embassy of the Necro Butcher and Eric Stevens defeated Grizzly Redwood and Balls, B-A-L-Z, Mahoney. Also, the Briscoe Brothers split their matches with Rhett Titus and Kenny King. And a funny thing happened on the way to the iPay-per-view. They had technical difficulties. And here's what they're saying. This came from the Go Fight Live folks. Thank you for purchasing the Ring of Honor Glory by Honor 9 show. GoFiLive.tv was the broadcaster of this event. As you know, we experienced technical difficulties during the show because the live stream to halt and at times become jittery, causing our viewers to miss some of the action. These technical problems were caused by a new piece of hardware we introduced into our broadcast system. We have an initial version of the show available now. We are working to insert the missing video portion, and our goal is to provide you with a complete video by Wednesday. ROH produces high-quality events, and this technical issue is Go Fight Live's problem alone, not ROH's. We are working to ensure that this problem never occurs again at any Go Fight Live event by analyzing and fixing the faulty piece of hardware. To my friend Mike for a second, this pay-per-view concept looks like it's going to be here to stay because Dragon Gate USA is coming. Do you see, as a fan, they charged $14.95 for this. I don't think WWE would give up their $50-$60 WrestleMania paydays, but would this be an attraction to you as a fan to say to WWE, you know what, screw you, your prices are too high, I'm going to stick with these guys like ROH and Dragon Gate USA?
I don't know. I mean, sure, you know, there's plenty of talent in those other places, but I don't know. I'm still watching the WWE pay-per-views. You know, it's the brand, so it's kind of rough for me. You know, unless it gets to that point to where I'm like, all right, I already know what's happening, you know, beforehand. You know, I already know the outcomes of all the matches and whatnot. You know, so I don't see myself doing that personally.
Tim, as someone who's been involved in this, and WWE, I believe, has a stream you can buy through their site, but I'm not 100% sure on the actual price of it. Is this the future of wrestling, that the pay-per-view market is just going to go in the toilet and they're going to have to start all over again online?
Oh, no, not at all. It's an enhancement for companies like WWE and TNA to be able to offer a stream online. As far as pricing goes, I don't know how many people are going to want to shell out $45.
Hey, WWE Universe,
oh,
want to watch a...
I don't know what that was. Honestly, it wasn't me. But I don't know if anybody wants to shell out $45 to watch something on a computer when they can get a much bigger, clearer, less pixelated view of the live video on your TV set. Yes, I know nowadays the computers with the LCD TVs and the high-def stuff like that, you can hook right up to most televisions. However, you still don't get the same view, the same effect, the same audio with the video or anything like that. And seriously, I would really like to know what their internet buy rates are at $45 a pop.
Yeah, Sir Rocket just chimed in. They're $45. We're going to let this settle, and we'll definitely bring it back up when we get closer to Dragon Gate USA's debut in late October. My friend Mike's going to get to his band, Screaming at the Silence. They're in the studio, so he's taking a break from them. Thanks for calling in, Mike. We appreciate it. Tim Stein, the big man, will be back here Sunday night after we watch Night of Champions, 11 o'clock Eastern. Coming up after the break, the only man to be a world champion and actually sit down with us, because the other two companies don't like the internet wrestling folks. Scrap Iron Adam Pearce after the break here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, Springsteen Night. We'll be back.
Money from my hand while his eyes take a walk all over you. Hands me two tickets, smiles, whispers good luck. Well, cuddle up, angel, cuddle up, my little dove. Well, ride down, baby, into this tunnel of love. Well, I feel a soft silk of your blouse. And I'm a little fun.
Are you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Thursday night, the Wild Talk Radio Network becomes a place where anything goes. Prepare to be simple. Thursdays, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. On the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Godfather of Extreme, Rob Parks. Tune in every Saturday, midnight-ish, for CB Radio, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
This interview is scheduled for one fall with a one-hour time limit, and it is for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. Introducing first the challenger. He comes with 10 years of wrestling journalism experience, weighing in at whatever his laptop weighs. The challenger, representing Online World of Wrestling Radio, Wild Talk Radio Network, Alan Wojcik. His opponent is the current reigning and defending NWA Heavyweight Champion of the World from San Diego, California, Scrap Iron, Adam Pearce. Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling, brought to you by the folks at the Wild Talk Radio Network. And as we said at the top of the hour, this is quite possibly the biggest guest I have personally interviewed, Alan Wojcik, returning here on the show. He is not one, not two, but the current three-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion. He is also the NWA British Commonwealth Champion, unless that's changed recently. Usually escorted to the ring
by the manager of champions, C. Edward Vanderpyle. He is going to be on this Friday, KDOC's NWA Hollywood program. I probably got the title wrong. David Marquez can yell at me later. It's NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. I apologize. He is the current champion, and we're honored to have on this show Scrap Iron Adam Pearce. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Being that you are the current world champion, this question comes up a lot when I'm at events, including NWA Pro Wrestling Fusion, which is run by Joey Machete.
Mm-hmm.
For fans that aren't aware of it, give what the current status is of the National Wrestling Alliance as opposed to how it was in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. What is the current reach of the NWA?
Well, that's a great question. You probably could answer that better than I could. The National Wrestling Alliance, i.e. the governing body, the LLC, is the same structure as it has been going back to the 60s, 70s, and 80s. The only thing missing in today's current NWA that has been missing since Jim Crockett left was the money and television exposure. And we're trying to, here in 2010, find a way to find one or the other, or in a perfect world, both at the same time. So we shall see what happens.
Now, being that this is your third reign as champion, your third reign began on March 14th. Take us through the mindset of being told you are going to be the flag bearer for championship that has been held since the 40s and 50s by legends such as Lou Thesz and Gene Kaniski and Jack Briscoe, the Funk Brothers, you know, Flair, Steamboat, Dusty Rhodes. Tell us how that feels to be told by the NWA, you are the flag bearer and you're going to do it for now the third time.
I mean, it feels good. I can't imagine anybody in any field being heralded with an extremely gratifying opportunity or a position of specter and grandeur, as it were, that wouldn't feel good. So it feels good today as it did the first time back in 2007. And I've said numerous times to people that my wrestling career probably will be earmarked with, people will remember it most for world championship runs in the NWA, and I'm extremely happy and humbled by that.
And when we had the king of old school, Steve Corino, on, and him also being a former NWA world champion, we asked this question and got an interesting answer. As the champion, especially during the 60s through the 80s, through the heyday of Jim Crockett Promotions, as the world champion, you literally would have gone around the United States and possibly the world, hitting the territories such as Championship Wrestling from Florida, Don Owen in the Pacific Northwest, the Mid-South. Would you have liked to have been the champion during that era? Do you think physically and mentally you'd be able to handle it?
I think that anybody who gets into the wrestling business with aspirations of making a living out of it 100% would answer that question yes. Now, I can see, I've known Steve personally for numerous years, and he's a homebody and hates getting on planes and doesn't like to drive too far, so I can see what his answer probably was. But for me, I think here in 2010, and especially in my third reign, I'm as close to that traveling champion that the NWA had in the 80s. I think I'm the closest thing to it probably since the early 90s. And you could probably verify what Bob Trowbridge said, but I've gone everywhere with this title in the last 6 months or so, starting in March. I was just in Mexico City last weekend with it. So, yeah, to answer your question, the short answer is yes. I think I would have jumped at the chance had I been born 20 years earlier.
Being that you are the current champion and multi-time, when you go to conventions like the one that was in Charlotte recently, do you sit and pick the brain of former champions for advice, or are they approaching you and saying, we're proud that you're the flag bearer for our lineage?
I guess it depends on who it is. You know, there are certain people who are at these conventions simply to make a buck and are extremely unhappy while they're there. And there's other people who are completely enveloped in what's going on and a part of the festivities and enjoying themselves. So it all depends on who it is. But specifically referring to Charlotte, after I wrestled Brian Danielson, the first person who said anything to me, the first person I saw in the back after the match was Terry Funk, who came back to offer congratulations. And it's just as you suggested, the first thing Brian and I did was pick his brain. You know, what did he see? What would he have liked to have seen? That type of thing. He was extremely gracious with his comments. And speaking for myself personally, I was really appreciative and still am of the praise he gave the match.
Mm. The NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, joining us. The show is NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. It'll be seen on the 17th on KDOC at 11 p.m. and possibly elsewhere. It depends on David Marquez, and we'll ask him that later on the next hour. Doing research on you brought up a couple interesting things, such as, and confirm or deny this one, that you actually were offered a WCW developmental deal and had worked out at the power plant. And what was the circumstances behind that?
Circumstances, simple, looking for a job, reached out to the right people, and praise God for Terry Taylor, who I still consider a friend to this day and someone who I speak to on a semi-regular basis, thought enough of me while he was at World Wrestling Federation and then at WCW to put me in a position to earn employment. And, you know, circumstances in my life at that time, this was going back to 1999, didn't allow me to relocate full-time to Atlanta, and I ended up turning down the development offer. But, yeah, absolutely, I can confirm that.
What was the overall experience like? Was there any names that we would know nowadays that were there at the same time as you that you would want to mention?
Sure. I mean, I don't see why not. The people I had directly dealt with at WCW, as I already mentioned, Terry Taylor, but also J.J. Dillon, and, of course, the people who ran the power plant at that time was Paul Orndorff and Buddy Lee Parker. And also there during that period was Dusty Rhodes, and I was involved with all of those people during that process. And you know, you hear horror stories about some of the guys that go down to the power plant and how rough and tough it was, and I can say that my experiences there were extremely gratifying, and I think that while some of those stories I think are overblown somewhat, you gotta remember that the power plant, you also could pay to try out there, and I think probably those over-the-top experiences were reserved for those who were paying to try to get in there. I wasn't there as, you know, I didn't pay to go there. I was there for a job interview.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned Terry Taylor being a role model and a mentor. Overall, your career, who would you consider to be role models to pattern yourself after, business-wise and in the ring itself?
I've been asked that question many times. I don't know who I would say I patterned myself after in the ring. I think any wrestler who's been at it for enough amount of time would say they probably stole stuff from, you know, the numerous people. So I don't know that it's fair to nail it down to one wrestler that I've emulated. But on the business side of things, I've just come off a great run for 2 years in Ring of Honor with Jim Cornette as probably, and I said this on the record, the best mentor I could have ever asked for on any number of facets of the wrestling business, and very proud to call him a friend and look forward to continuing the relationship there for sure.
Before we delve into the NWA itself, you've been a part of some memorable feuds in other organizations. The first one I wanted to bring up was partnered with the person who is a part of the NWA program that's going to be on this coming weekend, and that would be Joey Ryan and his Pro Wrestling Guerrilla promotion and their unique build with it's run by wrestlers and their rather unique show names
how did you come to be a part of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and the experience of, I mentioned, it's Joey Ryan, it's Super Dragon, a little bit of me this one, and said, oh, you've got to ask him about his time in FIP. Which happened first, being a part of FIP or Ring of Honor? And talk about the Florida experience, because you know, you're traveling as the NWA champion. You're going to run into different crowds. The Florida crowd is definitely different.
Yeah, I had fun. The first part of the question, FIP was before Ring of Honor, and I think in a lot of ways FIP was kind of my tryout, if you will, or audition for what was to come in Ring of Honor. And I love wrestling in Florida. And haven't gone there as NWA champion yet, although I've been in talks of doing that, so that would be great. I think the last time I wrestled in Florida, now I'm testing myself. I couldn't even tell you. It might have been FIP, and that's going back probably near 4 or 5 years now.
Wow.
But yeah, I had a great time in FIP. I thought the way FIP was run and the style that it was promoting, I was perfectly suited for, and had an awesome time while FIP was running on a larger scale.
So with Gabe,
position at that time in 2005, that I was pretty resigned and thrown to this day that I didn't want to work in WWE and had no intention of pursuing that as I did when I was younger. And you know, TNA was in 2004 and 2005, still relatively young and not nearly on the level that it is today, and obviously still growing as we know. But Ring of Honor was that easy alternative, and had so many friends who've gone through there, notably CM Punk, Colt Cabana, you know, Samoa Joe, Chris Daniels, people that I had been around in the business for a number of years, and I would I bugged Gabe for a while to give me an opportunity to go and see how the Ring of Honor crowd would take to me, and like I said, I think FIP was that first foray into him getting that an opportunity to look see and like what he saw in FIP, and first chance he gave me, I jumped at the chance to go to Ring of Honor. Who wouldn't?
Now, if you go to YouTube or go to ROH or NWA or go to other sites, it shows that you are very good at the promo that is the tradition of professional wrestling. But how did it feel when ROH said to you, okay, we're going to pair you with a guy who's an extreme loudmouth and can talk a hole through anyone and sell ice to the Eskimos and gum in a lockjaw award and being placed in Sweet and Sour with Larry Sweeney?
It was great. It was an absolute great time. I looking back, it was, you know, me and Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards and Chris Hero and Sarah Del Rey and Shane Hagedorn, and obviously you mentioned Sweeney, and we had a blast. I mean, and I wish that part of the run would have lasted longer than it did, but it was extremely fun, and the matches were always that much easier. I think I've said this to anybody who listens, you know, I think on a smaller level, maybe you wrestle people into the seats, but I think drawing money and really sucking people into the experience on a larger level, you talk them into the seats, and we had people in Sweet and Sour that could run up their lip, man, and it was a great time.
You were also there during one of the more interesting interpromotional feuds ever put on by two different companies. What was your initial reaction when you were told, we're doing a feud, and we're going to feud with then-owner John Zandig's Combat Zone Wrestling, and were you a fan of the ultra-violent Cage of Death and barbed wire baseball bat on fire concept?
I don't know if in a general sense I'm a fan of that. I think, as I saw in my younger days working in the Rotten's IWA Mid-South, once you start to desensitize your fans to those things, they stop having any meaning, and pretty soon you're just beating the shit out of each other, pardon my French, for no reason. And that wasn't the MO of the feud. The Ring of Honor CZW feud was actually, I thought, very smartly done, and I give credit to Gabe for allowing us and the wrestlers involved in these matches to kind of craft and weave the story. We had a general sense of which way we were going, and it was initially designed to to produce almost a college format, college football format in terms of fan reaction. In particular, when we would be in Philadelphia, which was the home stronghold for both Ring of Honor and CZW, in particular at the Philly National Guard Armory, just had about 1,200 to 1,500 people, literally split down the middle. And it was almost as if you were watching Auburn, Alabama, and half the place is Crimson Tide, and the other half of the place wants to kill him. So it was, it made what we were doing in the ring so much easier because you're feeding off of that emotion. And even though the main battles in the feud were what you would consider extreme or ultra violent or whatever you want, anytime you're working with a professional, obviously, you blood's going to be spilled and whatnot because that's what people are paying to see. But at the same time, I never felt like I was in jeopardy of being seriously injured. And keep in mind, this was before the Necro Butcher came in the Ring of Honor as a regular. And 9 times out of 10 on events, I'd be paired with him. And I don't know if that was because I was willing to get punched in the face more than other guys or whatnot. But I had a lot of fun with it. I had a blast, and it was the only time in the Ring of Honor during my entire 5 years there where I was a babyface and was a mouthpiece for the Ring of Honor side and serving as lieutenant commissioner to then ROH commissioner Jim Cornette, and when he couldn't make dates, then I was the mouthpiece by proxy. So it was a lot of fun and very memorable and extremely energetic. Very fun time.
He is the current reigning and defending NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, joining us on Online World of Wrestling Radio. The program is called NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. If you live in the California television market, you'll be sure to find it on KDOC starting on the 17th at 11 p.m. Being the champion, you've accomplished a lot of interesting things. One of them took place, I believe, on June 27th of 2008, where you were the first NWA World Champion to take on the then Ring of Honor World Champion, Nigel McGuinness. Was this something that the NWA was okay with, or was this something that you as the champion said, I think this is good for the belt, and memories of wrestling Nigel?
First of all, if the NWA didn't think it was a good idea, it wouldn't happen. So to answer that question, they were practically 100% behind it. And I'll say this for the organization, I'm extremely gratified and humbled at the amount of respect and that they give me in my judgment. Like if I think it's something that's good for the belt, 9 times out of 10, they allow me to do it. Where there might be some opposition from some of the members and whatnot. So credit to Bob Trobich for trusting his champion. Actually, it was suggested by Gabe Sapolsky, believe it or not. I was in Ring of Honor on a fairly full-time schedule, but not being recognized there as the NWA champion. And I remember him calling me and saying, hey, you still have the belt, right? And I said, yeah. He goes, do you want to bring it to Ring of Honor? And my first question, because I had been pushing or poking at him, saying, hey, let's do something with it. It's here, There's a boatload of history and whatnot, and we can get some good buzz going for both organizations and just get people talking. And for whatever reason, he didn't want to do it for a while. And then out of the blue said, I need a main event for Dayton, and I'm thinking about putting you and Nigel on, one of those old school kind of supercard main events, NBA champion versus ROH champion. Which again, I didn't see the reason why I would say no to that. Got it okayed by the NWA board we nearly did our thing, and I love Nigel McGuinness or Desmond Wolf or whatever you want to call him. Consider him a friend.
We still call him Nigel on this show. I love the character names that they've come up for some of these cats, but I'm sorry, it's Nigel McGuinness. It's Ron the Truth Killings. He's not R-Truth. I'm sorry. And if they had tried to name Samoa Joe something else, I probably would have raised my hand and said, you're insulting everybody in the room by doing that. Go ahead, sir.
I'm going to say copyright law being what it is. What do you mean?
I guess so. How soon after Gabe Sapolsky exiting ROH did the idea of you getting involved in the creative aspect come up, and were you hesitant to do it?
The first part of the question, I don't know that I could even really answer that. I had been questioned or been asked by Carrie Falcon during my last run. If you remember right, this is going back to September of 08, and I was already going to be leaving Ring of Honor as a cost-cutting move. They were cutting back on budgets and whatnot, and a big part of my expense is the flight from San Diego. So I for probably 6 or 8 weeks prior to that event in Philadelphia at the end of September of 08, that was going to be my last night in. I was being finished up, and in fact, that was I won the NWA title back that night from Brent Albright. And that weekend, Carrie Silken had asked me, some questions about just overall impressions of my time in Ring of Honor, and it was almost as if it was kind of an exit interview, but he was asking me more business-oriented questions, kind of what-if scenarios, if you could do this, what would you do, that type of thing. And I didn't think a whole lot of it until after the event, and I had just wrestled Brent, and it was right in the middle of the card, and it was a real touching night. Roderick Strong and Nigel McGuinness went out and got me a nice case of beer, and we had a little moment before the show, kind of saying goodbye to me and whatnot, and we had all the locker room involved, and it felt real good, and then went out and had the match with Brent, and then, started drinking my case of beer, and Carrie said, "Hey, look, let me talk to you." And we went outside, and that's when he lowered the bombshell, and he was wanted to replace Gabe, and wanted to know what I thought about taking on the job. And I was shocked. And, just like I think everyone probably was. And I say this to this day, it still feels weird. Here we are, 2 years later talking about Ring of Honor and not having Gabe associated with it, because it was so much a part of him and really his baby, that it was, surreal to be practically offered this job on the spot on the day that I was being let go, same time. Very weird. But I went home and talked to my family and to certain people and, made the decision to accept the position, because it was almost as if it wasn't going to be me, I thought it was easier on the locker room if it was someone that they knew. Mm-hmm. Someone who they would understand and had been, looking eye to eye with. And I was a veteran in the locker room, and it wasn't uncommon for guys to come to me with ideas or to run things past me anyhow because of just the level of experience I had at that point. So enough from that standpoint, it would have been easier for the guys to be able to relate and deal with me because they kind of, in a sense, already were. So I decided to take the leap and jumped in extremely, underqualified, I guess it's fair to say, but up to the challenge, as it were.
Was there any hesitancy from the locker room itself? Did anybody go, "Well, what qualifies you, Adam? I mean, I've booked and so and so, or I've booked elsewhere." Was there any hesitancy, or was the locker room all, like you said, they've come to you with their questions and their storylines and stuff? Was it an easy transition for you?
Well, I don't know if easy is the right word, but it was definitely a transition was necessary just because Gabe and I had different mindsets on things. And I think that happens anytime you have, the main difference being I'm a wrestler, Gabe never was. And that's not a slight to Gabe, but that's just the fact. I look at things from a wrestler's point of view first because that's what I am, and he didn't necessarily. So conceptually, we came at things from different perspectives. And I think that made it easy for the locker room to kind of say things and get points across to me in a way that perhaps Gabe wouldn't have understood necessarily. And like I said, that's not a slight. But to answer your question, no, I never had anybody come to me with any questioning or anything like that in any way. Now, I'm certain that took place because I've been a wrestler for 15 years, and I know what happens in locker rooms, and we all question our bookers, and we all get pissed off when we're not being used the way we think we should. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast when we're dealing with such a subjective medium. But no, I never had anyone directly challenge me, and I think a lot of that has to do with the level of respect that I've had for the guys, and I think that was just the fact that they were reciprocating that. I mean, those guys in that locker room, and I said this on record too, the best locker room I've ever been a part of and probably ever will be.
During this time in creative, you also had you weren't doing it alone. You had a former WWE head of SmackDown writer and the reboot ECW there. How much input did David Lagana give to you? Was he just there for support, or were you the main creative control?
I guess the easy answer to that is the buck stopped with me. David Lagana, who I initially met through the first incarnation of NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, I begged and pleaded to Kerry Silkin to say, hey, because I knew when I took the job at Ring of Honor, we were extremely close to landing that television deal with HDNet. And I had never done television, especially not with a cable partner, and especially not on the level that they were going to be coming in and wanting. And I wanted someone, at least in a consultant's frame of mind, that I could go to and lean on and say, hey, you know, what do you think of this, blah, blah, blah. And initially, that's how it started. And David Lagana still works with HDNet to this day and is an extremely competent and excellent producer in my mind. And, you know, he would offer, you know, ideas and whatnot, or you know, we would bounce things off of each other. And I've said on many occasions that when David and I were writing the Ring of Honor TV show, and let me just, for the record state, Dave's involvement in creative is on the television show. And that is that's the extent of it. And that continues today, which I'm very extremely grateful for. When it came to the TV show, man, I couldn't find a better team out there, a better teammate. And then it only got better when Jimmy Cornette became available. And, we made one hell of a three-headed monster on that TV show.
And how much input does he have? Because he's done interviews. He did the You Shoot series with our friend Sean Oliver, and he did a couple other projects with them. And when we had Sean on, he said that basically Jim Cornette is a part of their outfit now. Was he appearing just on camera originally, and he was brought in to assist with creative, or what's his input? And what's it like to sit across from a table and go, holy crap, you ran Smoky Mountain Wrestling and Ohio Valley Wrestling. Why am I writing this? You do it!
You know, the best part of Jim Cornette, and I've said this when people ask, is that he always allowed me to be the boss. And when he certainly could have overstepped me and gone to Kerry Silkin or gone above my head, he never once did. And I think that is probably the biggest show of respect that anybody could have ever shown me. And I'll always be grateful to Jimmy for that. And by the same token, I was never shy about going to him for ideas or finishes, particularly as it pertained to tag teams. I don't think there's a better tag team expert alive than Jim Cornette, at least not that was available to me. So, you know, he would definitely get the guys, and I credit him a lot with development, and especially in the tonal areas of some of the guys in Ring of Honor, and helping me map things out and just allowing himself to be a sounding board and giving me the opportunity to succeed and fail on my own merits, but being there as a crutch if I needed him. And I hope and I assume that he's fulfilling in that capacity today with Delirious, as he now steps into that very unenviable position in that thankless job. But I think the world of Jim Cornette. Absolutely think the world, and have learned an irreplaceable amount from this man who, for all his color and wit and outbursts that we get to see on YouTube, is a genuine gentleman, and I can't say that any more clearly.
He is the world heavyweight champion of the NWA, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, former ROH competitor, and many other promotions across the globe here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. The sites are NWAHollywood.com, all one word, and also NWAWrestling.com. You can find out information about the NWA, where you can see him defending the championship, going back into being a part of ROH, and we're very thankful that you're being so open with us here. For years, this company was a DVD-based group, especially when Rob Feinstein and Gabe set it up. For years, it was a DVD-based group, and we know from talking with Kevin Kleinrock, who was a previous guest with Big Vision Entertainment, the DVD market's not as great as it used to be. Whose idea was it to transition to the HDNet product, and was it a necessity for ROH to survive?
I think it first, let me preface this by saying, I know Kevin Kleinrock for years too, saying that the DVD market isn't today what it once was is a gross understatement. In comparison to what the DVD market was at the beginning, at the turn of the century, it's dead for all intents today.
Wow.
And I think it was a natural progression of business. I think Kerry Silkin, who'd at that point been in business for 7 or 8 years, existing under a DVD-based model and wanting to expand the business, it was only natural then to find a television partner. And I can tell you that process had gone on for a couple of years. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if you're going to run a wrestling company, or for that matter, any entertainment industry, if you don't have clearance on television somewhere, I don't know that your growth, you know, I don't know what your capabilities are beyond what you already are.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. So, HNet, who obviously is owned by Mark Cuban, and is a progressive and a very young television cable network, it was a perfect match, and I've said that many times too. I can't think of a better television partner for Ring of Honor than HDNet.
The other transition that happened besides going DVD to TV was leaving cable-based pay-per-view and going to the iPay-per-view with the Go Fight Live. When you're doing your creative process, at one point you were doing it basically for three different audiences. You had your DVD market, your folks that are watching on ROH TV on HDNet, and then your pay-per-view / internet pay-per-view market. Did you have trouble in the creative aspect of keeping the three areas, you know, in a storyline aspect, keeping the linear format, or was it an easy thing for you and Lagana and Cornette to do?
I think it was a bigger problem before there was a television program, and while there was the DVD timeline, if you will, and then the pay-per-view timeline, because they were run two months after the fact was when they started airing. And this is a problem that I didn't have to deal with as much as Gabe did, who I think the solution at that time was to try and kind of treat each timeline as separate. And obviously there are issues with continuity. And that's one of the things I really wanted to clean up, especially knowing that there was a television program that we were going to be shooting. And yes, that was also going to be on a time delay, if you will. We were shooting 6 weeks at a time. So we tried to marry the timelines, and when we decided to part ways with our terrestrial pay-per-view contract, which I can't talk a whole lot about, but suffice it to say, I was in favor of that 100%, much like everyone else in the company. And I was pushing towards wanting an online portal and an internet pay-per-view, because it was instant and it could be live, and we wouldn't have the 60 or 90 day waiting period that we were finding we were going to have, you know, even on demand on cable networks. And Go Fight Live was the partner that was chosen. And this Saturday, actually, in New York, this is taped before next week, but September 11th in New York, Globe Island 9 will be the fourth online pay-per-view that Ring of Honor is doing with the partners of Go Fight Live. It's going to affect the last event that will have my fingerprints on it in any way. And those things have proven to be, in essence, found money. You're making your product available to the people live and not wanting them to wait. And in that sense, it's very easy to kind of keep the television storylines, which we were already running on the house shows anyway, giving you a big build to a pay-per-view, which is, you know, the tried and true wrestling television model. You've got your 12 weeks of TV leading to the big event, whether that was at the Omni or at Dallas Stadium for Von Erichs, or at the Olympic out here, or at Madison Square Garden for the WWF back in the day. It was no different. It was, you know, take your 12 weeks, build to the big event, and just so happened those big events turned out to be internet pay-per-views for Ring of Honor. So I found it a lot easier once we began that process to get everybody on the same page and you know, I call them house shows, but the live events that in the past were strictly used to try and sell DVDs and profit that way, we're now running the TV angles, and those were then in turn leading to the big events, and that's how we did it. And yeah. I thought it worked well, and I think it will continue to work well, given the assumption that Ring of Honor continues to build its business that way. If it wants to, if Ring of Honor decides that the television model isn't working or isn't working fast enough for them in the future and kind of reverts back to a DVD base, then I'm not so sure that my method of doing things, or for that matter, Jimmy Cornette's method of doing things will prove fruitful. But time will tell.
One of the other things that happened going to HDNet was Mike Hodgewood, whoever his name is pronounced, coming in, and ROH mainstay Lenny Leonard leaving. Was that something that it was Kerry's decision, your decision, RHDNet's decision, and how did it feel after him being on the DVDs with Dave Prazak for so long to put on the TV show and go, hey, that's not Lenny?
For the record, I love Lenny Leonard and also consider him a friend. Also grown to love Mike Hodgewood, who is a complete professional. And he was brought in by HDNet, and I had very little, if anything, to do with that decision. But when you're putting on a television program that is owned by the network, you're at the mercy of the network. And people can say what they want. I think Mike Hodgewood's extremely entertaining.
As we talk here, obviously you're no longer in the creative position. Is there an easy way for you to explain? Was it a personal decision? Was it Kerry's decision, or creative differences? What led you to not be involved anymore in creative?
I don't know that I can really answer that. Unfortunately, the only thing that I'm comfortable in saying, and I've said this in my public statements, which you can find, probably at will on the internet, is that oil and water don't mix. And the other statement that I've also made is, I think at the end of the day, anyone you talk to would tell you that the in-ring wrestling aspect of Ring of Honor had nothing to do with my departure.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
We're going to transition into the main reason that you are here, besides being that you were with Ring of Honor for years, and that is being the world champion. And going over the top 10 of contenders to you, you've had several challengers since regaining the championship. The first one we wanted to ask about is someone who you had a verbal feud with on YouTube and other internet sites, and that would be the former world's, well, actually is part of the world's greatest tag team. He wrestled at Glory by Honor 9. Your experience in the ring with Charlie Haas?
100% professional. I can't speak highly enough of Charlie and obviously his accolades and his past experiences and accomplishments in wrestling speak for themselves. Those things are what led me to want to bring him into Ring of Honor, which obviously, like you said, came to fruition at Glory by Honor 9, and I'm hoping that he'll be able to continue a relationship with that company and allow his wrestling, which I think is top-notch, to kind of take the stage for him. But in particular, as it pertains to the NWA, I tangled with him on August 14th in suburban Dallas for promoter Ken Taylor, and we had the 39th annual Parade of Champions, which obviously people remember because of Kerry Von Erich being Ric Flair in, 84? Does that sound right? 84?
I think it was in the mid-80s, yeah.
Yeah, so Charlie and I were the main event on August 14th and went to a wild double count out, and his wife was involved, and general chaos ensued in Gainesville, Texas.
You're never going to lose the guy who you took the belt off of. Thoughts on Blue Demon Jr., especially as a champion coming from Mexico, and you said you had been to Mexico recently.
But overall, your experience in the ring with him, is there a language barrier at all in there, or is he as good a worker as he looks on DVD and on TV?
There's another guy who was a second-generation star and a veteran of near 30 years, and for all intents on the Lucha Libre wrestling side, Mexico is a cultural icon. You know, it's him and El Hijo del Santo can take that match practically anywhere in the world where Spanish speakers are familiar with Lucha Libre and draw a house. So from that standpoint, I was very honored to even be a part of him entering the championship picture in the NWA, and at that time was he had a huge relationship worldwide with Coca-Cola, and here's a guy's face and likeness on cans of energy drink and on billboards everywhere, especially in Hispanic markets. So it was a natural fit, and he was a part of the Dave Marquez Arena tour from 2006 until the economy took a turn in 2008. So we were familiar with each other, and had the opportunity to go down and wrestle him in Mexico City and in all over Texas and Arizona and all over the place. So yeah, I mean, as far as wrestling is one of those great activities in sports that even if you don't speak the same language, physically everything kind of follows the same pattern, if you will. So from that standpoint, it was business as usual.
Being the world champion, such as when the NWA was under the Crockett's and in the territorial era, there are a few secondary championships underneath you. I want to address the two men that have the belts. One of them was involved in the match that you won your championship back for the third time. That would be the national champion, Phil Shatter.
Mm-hmm. Phil Shatter's a beast. Phil Shatter's not a millionaire, I don't know. He's somebody who looks every bit the part of television wrestling star in 2010, from his physique, his looks, his tattoos. You look at Phil Shatter, the first person that I was reminded of when I saw him initially was Brock Lesnar, muscular and tattooed and looks every bit the part, and is top-notch inside that ring. And I think with some exposure, Phil Shatter could definitely leave his mark on the wrestling business going forward for sure.
The other man that's been pursuing you for months, and actually the night that you wrestled Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, whatever he's called this week, in Charlotte, tried to end the career of Phil Shatter, and he would be the former Pro Wrestling NWA Florida Pro Wrestling Fusion champion and the current North American champion. He's claimed that the Sheik has claimed through translators, and I believe recently he's actually done a couple interviews in English, that you're ducking him or the NWA is protecting you. Your thoughts on the Sheik as a wrestler and settled as for us, are his claims true, false? Has he been facing the wrong way, praying to Mecca, and it's messing with his head?
I think that any time you're dealing with somebody who's obviously gutless, and less than a man, they would make claims, egregiously overstated and untrue claims. Here's the Sheik, who tried to make a name for himself in Charlotte on the second day of events at the NWA Legends Fan Fest by trying to cave my head into the chair from behind. And I don't know how, number one, I don't know how that's not assault with a deadly weapon, but I refuse to press charges. And number two, here's a man claiming that I'm ducking him, that any time I come and look for a fight, where's the Sheik to be found? The first tapings of the NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood television show that was going to start airing here in the next few days, I was in the building with the Sheik. I had problems with the Sheik in the building. I went looking for the Sheik myself, and I called the Sheik out. So for him to intimate to anybody that I'm ducking him or that the NWA, listen, the NWA couldn't be any more unhappy with the fact that I'm the heavyweight champion of the world for the third time. So to think that anybody would believe on the sunniest day that the NWA is protecting me, obviously isn't smelling the coffee that you should be drinking in the morning. And the Sheik, and I don't know what it is he drinks in the morning, where it comes from, but if he's going to tell anybody that I'm hiding behind anybody, obviously haven't been around the block enough times, it doesn't do their homework, hide from nobody, If he wants to play dirty tactics, if he wants to involve fireballs and chairs and hardware, we just spend time talking about CZW ring on our feet. If he wants to go to those depths, he picked the right man.
When we talk to David Marquez in the next hour, he may give a different answer to this question, but what was the genesis of this program being set in Hollywood at the Galaxy Theater, being NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, and talk about just the NWA itself television-wise, because there was the NWA Wrestling Showcase that I believe was on either Dish Network or it was somewhere on one of the Dish channels. Talk about the NWA overall as a product and what fans can expect to see debuting Friday night.
This is the deal that David Marquez has been waiting for, since basically World Legion Wrestling came about in the early 90s for him. The Los Angeles market, and I don't have to tell you this, is obviously one of the biggest in our country. And for the people that are running KDSU, John Manzi, their general manager, and Bert Ellis, the owner of the station, who comes from a wrestling background, just a footnote, Bert Ellis owned WMC5 in Memphis and worked at TBS in the 80s. So this is someone who comes from a territorial wrestling television background, completely understands what the concepts are and the goal of the television program. And as I stated earlier, when we were talking about the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance hasn't had a television partner of that Jim Crockett ilk. And this is what we're hoping the relationship with KDOC and Ellis Entertainment can turn into, as he has worked, like I said, with Jerry Lawler in the past and drawn big money in Memphis, and of course working at Superstation TBS, would have a completely intimate understanding of what the National Wrestling Alliance can do from that standpoint. And KBOC is one of the channels that had SmackDown on Friday nights, and obviously that program is going to Sci-Fi here October 1st, and he didn't want to not have wrestling on the program because it did so well, and this is kind of right place, right time, I think, for Dave Marquez, who went in and put the deal together, and here we are now on a station that's going to reach the entire metropolis of Los Angeles County, and which is a huge volume of people, and we're trying now to partner up and kind of, in essence, go back to what that old territorial wrestling television format was, and incorporate that into trying to make, in 2010, a real-life, functioning, running wrestling territory, the likes of which all died out in the 80s. And I think this is a labor of love for a lot of people, including myself, in something that we're hoping, through the right nurturing and the right time and the right partnerships, can turn into something that can be lucrative, and not only for the station and for guys like myself and David Marquez, but for the younger generation of wrestling talent out here on the West Coast that doesn't get the exposure that a lot of them deserve. And this is going to be their opportunity, assuming all the chips fall the right way, to have an opportunity to kind of take a step in a path that's been kind of abandoned, in a sense, in the last 20 or 30 years. And it's a new, old way of doing business, if you follow. And we're extremely excited on the NWA side. In fact, I'm going to the television station tomorrow to send some things for the program that will air in the coming weeks, and looking forward to seeing all of our ad reps and everything there. And 2 weeks ago, we had a cruise around Newport Beach area on a private yacht to discuss things. You could find the promo that I shot on the Sheik on YouTube, set on the water, and just a great group of people who see the potential and understand that wrestling brings viewers. And even if it's a local product that may feature stars who, for all intents, are unknowns, if you understand what I mean, in the Los Angeles area, except for a small group of diehard wrestling fans, they understand that given the right time frame and the right attention, that this can grow into something. And every station would love to have local programming that draws good ratings. And I think the outlook for Championship Wrestling from Hollywood is by far the most positive outlook that the NWA television in any of its forms have had. We were on the Dish Network on Colors TV with the Wrestling Showcase, and that ran for a full season, 13 weeks, and that was it. And this is something that can prove, I think, much more fruitful, and we're certainly hoping that's how it turns out.
We're in our remaining moments with the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce. To lighten things up a moment or two, doing research for this, my wife is not a wrestling fan, but I happen to have I was on the desktop and playing a couple of your interviews, and she said, "Hey, you're interviewing Stone Cold Steve Austin." And I was like, "No, that's Adam Pearce." Do you ever run into that? Do you ever get mistaken for Austin or any other bald-headed famous gentleman?
For people that aren't wrestling connoisseurs or fans of the business like you and I get often what I get, and you tell me if you see this, because I guess at times I can see this and sometimes I don't. I think the Stone Cold thing comes from obviously being bald and having a goatee. But I always get, he looks like Stone Cold but sounds like The Rock.
Okay, I'll go for that.
Do you see that? Do you really see that? Because I don't know that I see that. I guess my cadence reminds people of how the Rock would do his promos. Obviously, completely different personas. But yeah, I get that. I get that more often than not. And usually, it makes me want to pull my hair out. And of course, I don't have any hair, so I can't do it.
The Spud guy from WrestleTalk Radio wanted to be here, and he apologizes for not. But he being a trained wrestler himself and getting into mixed martial arts, wanted to ask, we've heard Steve Corino discuss going to a bar overseas with C.W. Anderson and going into a fetish bar and having a Samoa Joe-like looking woman involved. We've had Kenny King, El Generico, and Brian Danielson in a rib. If you could pinpoint it to one, what is the best rib you have ever seen pulled or had pulled on you? And it can be PG-13, but let's not get R-rated or NC-17.
Okay, I can do that. You know what, for whatever reason, and I don't know what that reason is, though I do have my suspicions, people don't rib me. And I think part of it is because they're worried I'll punch them, which I wouldn't, because I love ribs. But I think the real reason is because they know if they rib me, then they're going to get the mother of all ribs in return. And I think probably I don't know if it was the best, but the impact it had on this person always brings it to the forefront of my mind. Colt Cabana's very first road trip ever in professional wrestling, and I want to say the year is 1998. You could check me on that. I think it was 98.
Okay.
With myself, Ace Steel, Danny Dominion, and CM Punk and Colt Cabana on their very first road trip out of Chicago, going to Minneapolis to work in what was then called St. Paul Championship Wrestling for a promoter by the name of Ed Hellier. So, and this is December of whatever year it was, 98, I guess. And Danny and Ace always like to rib, have a few drinks, have a good time. Ace would love to put like dead birds in people's bags and things like that. But on this particular road trip, they decided it would be funny to stuff Cabana's jacket with toilet paper. Just, you know, take the wad off the roll and stuff his pockets or stuff his sleeves or whatever, which I thought was incredibly lame, actually. I didn't understand what was funny about it, as we're all kind of giggling like schoolgirls as they're stuffing toilet paper in Cabana's jacket. And I was like, well, if this is going to be a rib, we got to do this right. If we're going to involve toilet paper, then we're going to have to incorporate what toilet paper's actually used for. Cabana tells the story much funnier than I, but suffice it to say that I took the roll of toilet paper and I put it to use. And then I stuffed it in his jacket, and then he put his jacket on, and then he discovered what was in his jacket. And to this day, 12, 13 years later, I am probably the only person on planet Earth that calls Colt Cabana shit pockets in 1901. And, yeah. Yeah. It was great. Yeah, well, not for him, I guess, but for me it was. Oh, God, I still laugh about it. He was so pissed, too.
As champion, you've wrestled in America and you've wrestled elsewhere. Favorite city or country outside of the United States to wrestle in?
Tokyo, Japan. I wrestled in the Tokyo Dome for New Japan in 2005 against Don Fry's sparring partner, George Castro, in front of however many thousand people. You know, they always inflate the attendance, but if I had to guess, and I'm bad at that, I don't know, 30,000 people. Just great. An absolute great town. Love Tijuana. Love Mexico City. Outside of that, I think Toronto's a great town. I love wrestling in Canada just because I think it's the fans that are not as critical as some places here in the United States. Winnipeg, Toronto, Vancouver, love wrestling there. But, yeah, probably Tokyo's at the top of the list with Tijuana second.
In closing, we got this email to us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com when it was mentioned to my friends in, that are fans of wrestling and in general. The big question that was sent to us was, seeing the success of Bryan Danielson, Samoa Joe, CM Punk, Christopher Daniels at a certain point, Nigel McGuinness have had in one form or another in WWE or TNA, is an aspiration of yours to give a WWE or TNA run a shot, or is that never come into your mind?
Well, I mean, I think I may have partially answered that earlier when I was talking about, you know, not wanting to pursue a WWE job. You know, you never say never in this business. And obviously, if you are trying to make professional wrestling a vocation and pay your bills off of it, there are a very limited number of places that you can go that will allow you the opportunity to do that. Mm-hmm. And having just, parted ways from one of those places, Ring of Honor, that limits me now to, in effect, TNA or WWE. And I have friends that work for both companies and people that I have known for years, you know, decades that are there, who, you know, if I called on to put in a good word, I'm sure could. But I really haven't crossed that bridge yet, to be honest with you. I'm only a couple weeks removed from my full-time position at Ring of Honor, and I'm kind of reevaluating things now. And my life in 2010 is much different than it was when I began wrestling in 1995. And I've got a family to care about and other businesses and other things and involvements and interests outside of wrestling that I'm wrapped up here in Southern California. So it would have to be the right opportunity for me, and I'm not sure that my style of wrestling necessarily fits what's on television, particularly for WWE. I think if I was going to go to one of those companies as a performer, it'd be more likely TNA. And again, I'm just speaking as myself. It's not like I haven't had formal discussions with anybody at either company outside of the normal conversation that I have anyway. So I don't know. I'm still kind of seeing what the future holds, and in the back of my mind, hoping that NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood can pick up a little steam and find the right promotional partners and see if we can't turn this into something that could potentially turn into a full-time paying vocation. So you never know.
As mentioned, the program is NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood on KDOC Fridays at 11 p.m. Eastern. NWAWrestling.com and NWAHollywood.com are the best places to get information on this program. We want to thank the current and reigning NWA World, and I use the heavy word there, World Champion, Scrap Iron Iron Pierce, for joining us here. It's been a pleasure. Coming up after the break, the brainchild of this project, the owner, executive producer of it, David Marquez, will be joining us here. He will be live on My World of Wrestling Radio. We will be right back after this commercial break.
You know, the more things change, the more things stay the same. For as long as the internet wrestling community has been around, there have been people and internet radio shows that will bitch and complain about every little thing they see. Well, the crew over at WrestleTalk Radio are trying to change that by highlighting the positives of each and every WWE and TNA event. These wrestlers put their body on the line to entertain us each and every week. So how about we praise them instead of bitching about the little things that get to us? So with that in mind, you should come listen to WrestleTalk Radio, Sunday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, or right after any WWE or TNA pay-per-view, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Because this is how we say thank you to those that entertain us.
Wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talent today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today,
Rob Van Dam,
Mr. Kennedy,
Christian Cage,
Brett
Derry,
Candice LaSalle,
Christy Hemme,
Jay Lethal,
Yesterday,
Brett the Hitman Hart,
the Sergeant Slaughter,
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million Man,
Paul Hogan, the quickest of all time,
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman,
and tomorrow,
T.J. Wilson, Natty Neidhart,
Harry Smith, Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site for pro juice, Online World of Wrestling, www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
The evolution of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday nights when you step into the ring with WrestleTalk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join WrestleTalk Radio every Sunday night live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Do you live in the Philadelphia, Washington, Cross, New Jersey area and are in need of a licensed massage therapist? Then you need Johnny Cashmere. He specializes in a full body relaxation experience in 30, 50, and 90 minute sessions. Deep tissue and pressure point treatment are also available. His office hours are 9 to 5 p.m., Monday to Friday. To make an appointment, email backseatjk@aim.com. Johnny also offers one-on-one yoga and meditation sessions. What are you waiting for? Set up your appointment to relaxation now. Apparently, I get a bad rap for putting Rock down all the time. And well, I guess I should apologize for it. He really is a good guy and does a lot of hard work around here. So Rock, I'm sorry. You are awesome, and I truly mean that. Okay, so how much am I getting paid to say that one? What do you mean this is still recording? Damn. Keep listening to Wild Talk Radio Network.
I bought a
bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
What an appropriate song. Thanks to Scrap and Adam Pierce for being a great sport, being with us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. That goes out to the folks of World Wrestling Entertainment who made us watch another brain-numbing episode of NXT. That Springsteen song came off one of his solo albums known as Human Touch, and we are back here on Online World of Wrestling Radio with Springsteen Night on the Wild Talk Radio Network, also brought to you by Click Wrestle On Demand and undergroundradio.com. The number to dial in is 877-588-9877, option 1. And the reason you're going to call in is because if you've been asking us questions during this chat about, I know this gentleman's name from somewhere, but how do I know him? You'll get all your answers. He's been involved in wrestling projects for years, involved with New Japan Pro Wrestling, involved in Wrestling Society X, and for the better part of many years, has been the creative, production-wise, and everything, including appearing on camera for the National Wrestling Alliance, and is the man who is the brain behind NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, which debuts on the 17th, 11 p.m. on KDOC-TV. We are honored to have David Marquez joining us here on the show. Good evening, and thank you for joining us.
Hey, Alan, what's going on out that way?
Oh, lots of fun. We're very blessed to find out that Michael Cole is gone, possibly from NXT. Hallelujah, Rock. He's doing his job because the guy, as somebody once said to me, the guy's had a gig there since at least 96, 97. So he can't be that bad a guy. As someone who's done TV over the years, your thoughts, if you watch any of WWE's recent programming, on a bad guy announcer lead commentator? I mean, we've seen it as a heel with Bobby the Brain Heenan and Jesse the Body and many of the greats, but a lead commentator?
Well, you know, I don't watch the WWE programs too often. I'm just too damn busy. I would like to watch to see what everybody's doing, and especially see my friends that are on that program, on those programs. It's always interesting from that side of the wall, of course. I don't know, that's an interesting thing, a lead commentator being a bad guy, you know. I'm always booed when I walk into a building anyhow or into a ring, so I consider myself a good guy that gets booed, so who knows? Who knows where they're going to go with that?
You and I, believe it or not, I found this out when you and I first met at the NWA National Convention, which was amazingly the last one they ever did in 2005 in Nashville. I'm sitting there doing a tape with you for another radio show, and a former mutual employer came up. How in the heck did a guy like you end up working for Walt Disney Company? And explain what you used to do, because you had a pretty lofty, some pretty lofty stuff with that company.
Oh, I've done all kinds of things for the mouse. They were my first job ever. I was a tour guide at Disneyland and, when I was younger, and, I gave guided tours of Disneyland, and, some people might think, boy, that's kind of a silly job, but it wasn't actually. It was a very good job because I got to present and speak in front of a large crowd and have to be knowledgeable about something that everybody seems to be knowledgeable about, whether it's Mickey Mouse or Space Mountain or Sleeping Beauty Castle. So that was at an early age. And then all my friends that stayed when I moved on to go into television and broadcasting, they all moved up into middle management. You know, and I came back in the late 90s from doing wrestling and broadcasting and whatnot. to do some broadcast services and some other things, and I ended up going into a program called Disney Special Activities, which was a department that handled VIP guests, or guests of high-profile stature, and we acted sort of as publicists. If you've ever seen someone walking around a Walt Disney Resort park in a plaid vest and a gold brooch, that's what I did. So I was a VIP host for a while and then went into broadcast services at the park. There's a closed-circuit TV channel that I was around when it first started called Cast TV, since cast members are what the employees are called at Walt Disney Parks and Resort. And I spent an awful long time there and made an awful lot of friends. I did not go to college. I went to Disney parks, it seems, and met all the right people and learned on the front line of what business was about and how to promote. And, you know, believe it or not, promoting a headlock and promoting Mickey Mouse is there's an awful lot of similarities.
Oh, I believe it. Another amazing thing happened to you in that you were part of a very unique production company run by one of the most popular actors of the late 80s, 90s, and as a star till this era.
I'd even say still today. I mean, the guy's still getting jobs and making movies.
How the heck did you end up working for Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage and Saturn Films?
Well, that all came from Disneyland. I was Nicolas Cage's host and for a number of years. And for my, it's kind of funny, on one of my birthdays, I can't remember which one, I had to work and escort him and his son Weston and his entourage, basically, through Disneyland. And I just remember him turning around to me one day, and we used to always talk about movies, and it wasn't just small talk, because you do create relationships with these people, because they have to trust you, you know, you're with their family, and you're pretty intimate with them. Nick and I really hit it off. He's a very big Disneyland fan, which is always a good thing when, you know, that's where you're at every day. And so, I don't know if I said this, I probably said this to you before, I'm a big a fan of Walt Disney the man, and mm-hmm. not necessarily the Walt Disney Company as it is today, but the story of Walt and Roy Disney, for two brothers coming from Kansas City in the early 1920s to Hollywood, to virtually, you know, create an entire genre of entertainment, which is animated pictures and animated shorts. So, and that leading into the whole feature links and what Walt Disney is, the man, he's not just a DVD, you know, box or a brand, there's actually a man that goes with it. So anyways, from an early age, I was always captivated by Walt. And luckily enough, and plus, much like you, Alan, I watched him on television. A lot mm-hmm. of today's generation does not have the opportunity of seeing Walt Disney on TV presenting his TV show, so... at any rate, I was hypnotized by that, and luckily, Nick also had a fancy for Walt, and so we had an awful lot to talk about, and I knew a lot of side stories and backstage-type stuff that he was very interested in, and one day we were over lunch at Club 33, which is an exclusive country club type of a restaurant at Disneyland, it's members only. He looked over at me and asked when am I going to put my 2 weeks in? And I thought he was playing around, and I said, well, I guess when I'm done here. And at that same time, I was producing for UPW and Rick Bassman out here in California, and the XPW show for Rob Black and Kevin Kleinrock, and working at Disneyland all at the same time. So,
holy cow.
It was pretty interesting during that time, the late 90s, early 2000s. At any rate, I didn't take it as if it were a real offer, and his assistant, Steven, reached over the table and asked if I could start, you know, in 3 weeks. And I didn't know what he was talking about, to be quite honest with you. And I just thought Nick was the type that went around and acquired things, seeing that he's, you know, relatively wealthy. So basically I said, yes, why not? Let's go see what this is about. I started as a creative executive for Saturn Films, doing odd and end type script work. I had never worked in Hollywood before in that capacity. And at Disneyland, I was writing guided tours for the part. So, you know, there's a lot of script writing and research and all that kind of stuff. So, and then the wrestling background. So it all kind of storytelling has always been there. And so Nick really, I think Nick liked more than anything that I wasn't a Hollywood guy and that I told him what was on my mind and I wasn't a yes man. Not that he was surrounded by, at least from what I saw from the office standpoint, because the office and his personal life were two different things. I hung around him every now and again, but, you know, you wouldn't see me paddling around with him on a red carpet or anything like that. But at any rate, that's how I ended up over at Saturn, and then I started developing stories and scripts and original concepts and worked on several of the pictures that have come out, at least in the last 5 or 6 years, I want to say. Either it's fortunate or unfortunately, I've not seen them. So I don't know necessarily what's in those pictures that I may have had my hand on. Because there's a lot of rewrites and a lot of things and studios and executives and all that. But I do appreciate that my time at Saturn Films. Unfortunately, it's not around anymore. And my time with Stephen Burris and Houston Parker and Seth and all those guys down there. It was a hell of a learning experience, let's put it that way, because I learned that I disliked Hollywood more than I thought I disliked Hollywood.
He is David Marquez, NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood is the program that he is involved with, KDOC-TV in California, if it's in your area, and I believe it's also going to be available through NWAHollywood.com. You brought up the XPW concept, and a while back when Kevin was, Climrock was here, talking about the Viva La Lucha project, he talked about his time with this with Rob Zakari, Rob Black, whatever you want to call him. Did you have any trepidations going from working for this, what many people consider the squeaky clean Walt Disney company, to a company that's basically promoted by Rob's porn company? Was there any moral dilemma there, and what would have happened if Disney had found out? And just talk about your relationship with Rob before jail.
Disney wouldn't have cared either way. You know, it's all show business, man. It's all entertainment. You go and work at an, or you go work in an opportunity for an opportunity, you know, when it comes up, no matter what the circumstances are. Now, I must say, I did not know what I was walking into when I got to XPW. That's the truth. I had never heard of them, to be very honest with you. I think I just had moved back out here from Missouri, where I was working in television out there and running World Legion Wrestling with Hardy Race and Gordon Soley. And that was in the late 90s, probably about 97 through mid-99. I'm trying to remember when Gordon passed. I think that was July 2000. So I came back to California that winter of 99 and went immediately back to work for Disney. And then Al Isaacs, I don't know if you know that name at all. If you older internet wrestling people out there will probably recognize the name Al Isaacs of ScoopsWrestling.com. Al and Terry Taylor, actually, I think he was with the WWE at the time, pushed me to go and do production for Rick Bassman and UPW out here. That was right about the time when Cena was just coming in. And so we all kind of started around the same month, I want to say. And then at the same time, XPW was looking for production people. And I had met Kevin Kleinrock through, I really can't remember how I met Kevin. I don't know. Now I'm reminiscing.
I'm sure he'd love to hear that. Yeah, I have no idea how I met you, but you're an awesome person.
I know when I met him. I can remember exactly, and I don't want this to come off derogatory at all because it's not. He was this, you know, skinny kid, because I think I'm about 6 or 7 years older than Kevin. So he was a skinny kid with his feet propped up on the front, on the lip of the desk, and his knees up to his chin. And, you know, you all know him, a dorko dude, if you ever watched the show. But he was sitting there gnawing on the big, and I had never seen matzah before in my life. So So he was chewing on this giant cracker while interviewing me. Of course, he was much younger then, and there was other influences and things running around that office, and who knows what other amoebas and parasites were growing on the wall there. But it was an interesting time, that's for sure. I learned that in order to get paid for wrestling, I would have to cut some X-rated scenes, and that was the first time that ever came into my world, and it was interesting. Not that I'm that square, but you know, people do think of me as that, as you said, that squeaky clean image. It's pretty true. You've met me in real life, Alan. You know that it's pretty true.
Absolutely.
But at any rate, it was interesting working there. Rob was extremely boisterous, extremely loud. He used to laugh at me. Well, everybody laughs at me, but he used to laugh at me pretty good. And the ideas and such, when I was invited into meetings, you know, strictly production at the time, no creative. It was just, I made great friends there. Dwight Press, Johnny Webb is a very good friend of mine now. Chaos, of course, Smiley, Angel, you know, Dynamite D, who unfortunately has passed, Supreme, all those guys that I knew there, they've all been very good friends throughout the years. And, of course, Kevin is, I don't know if he'd admit this either, but, you know, we're practically family. I consider him a brother of mine, and we fight just like brothers and argue just like brothers and the whole bit. So I love all those guys, and I appreciate the time I had there.
Yeah, you mentioned working with two legends of the business in Harley Race and Gordon Solie. To transition from the dark to the light, what's it like to go to the office and there's Harley Race and Gordon Solie? I mean, for me, I don't mark out as much as I used to when I was younger, but I probably would have been like, do I bow? Do I curtsy? What was it working like with those two legends?
Well, it was interesting. You know, coming from Disney and already being around celebrities and living in Hollywood in the Los Angeles area most of my life, I'm one of the few Angelinos that are around. This is my town. I'm from here. So celebrities and people of high profile have, you know, they're in the grocery store with you. You could be shopping right next to John Travolta. Doesn't matter. It's just, this is home to them too. You know, like I hear a lot from people from other parts of the country, where you have, you know, where they say, oh, California, all you guys like to do are chase celebrities and cars and trials and all that. But people have to remember, this is, they're our neighbors, and where I live is where they live, so it's local news. Unfortunately, it's international news, too, for some reason. But at any rate, how it first started was I was working at a TV station in Springfield, Missouri, and I went out and started my own production company to produce commercials and other type of video, and nonlinear editing was just getting going. I spent a truckload of money on a machine called the Media 100 in the mid-90s, and it's an Anchor now. It was about $30,000 back then for what you can get a Final Cut and a laptop for, geez, like $3,000. And then it wasn't even as quick as, nowhere near as quick. I think it came with like a 3-gig drive or something, and it was ridiculously expensive. And I just got in my head that we can go ahead and produce a wrestling show. And I had already done it here in California in the early 90s. A very small company that didn't get off the ground too well because of, you know, wrestling politics and taking advantage of a young person, namely me. So it didn't go well, and we were doing stuff out of San Bernardino Arena, which is no longer exists, unfortunately. I wish it did. And I grew up at the Olympic Auditorium. So anyhow, I saw all this, and I figured, well, we have relationships with TV stations because of what I did. Let's go out and try to push a wrestling show. So myself, a fellow by the name of Chris Hansen, and Greg Young, who's still with me to this day, he's the guy who creates all the motion graphics and most of the posters and things you see come out of our company. He's an artist, a graphic artist, motion graphics and whatnot, and a fantastic editor. And he's getting to directing in his own, too. But, you know, 15 years ago or so, we started a little thing called World Legion Wrestling in Springfield, Missouri. And Carl Lauer, who's the one of the heads of the Cauliflower Alley Club, also lived in Missouri, and I needed a license to run, and so I partnered up with him, and then we needed a booker. And Bill Ash, you older wrestling fans will know Bill Ash as a journeyman wrestler in the Mid-South area, and his father and he were very famous for making all the boots. I think it was B.A. Boots, perhaps, out of, I think, Paris, Arkansas. At any rate, everybody knew Bill. And so he came in to be the original booker of the company. And Harley, I went out to the Cauliflower Alley meeting, a convention thing, and Harley was there, and I knew he lived in Kansas City, which wasn't far. We needed a rub, of course. So my plan was to woo him versus how it probably should have went. He should have wooed me. And Gordon Sully happened to be there, who I'd never met before. And it was a three-day event. And I remember going up to Gordon's table in the bar, where he had the longest cigarette I had ever seen, very Cuella de Vil-like, and Benson Hodge or something like that, it's called, B&H, a long cigarette, and vodka and Schweppes, and he was sitting there, and he was pretty plastered, and I introduced myself to him, and Lou Fez and Abdul the Butcher were sitting, and the Destroyer were sitting around him, and I introduced myself as just this, "Hi, I'm David Marquez, and I'm going to do this show. And I'd really like to have you do the broadcasting." Of course, I knew who Gordon Sully was. And he gave me this dead-eye look and his and very customary Gordon Sully went, and I just looked at him like someone shot my dog. And anyway, he then took his drink off his napkin that was very soggy, and he asked me to draw a schematic of what I thought the camera layouts would be. And so I did. And as soon as I finished that, he winked at me, and he said, "I'll be there, babe." And for 2 years, Gordon was the announcer of World Legion Wrestling. And Harley then came in, unbeknownst to him. He kind of tricked himself into it. He was walking through the convention with a handful of beers, and I stopped him and did the whole spiel to him. And he pointed over at Gordon, and he didn't even know I was speaking to Gordon, at least not that I knew of. And he said, "If you can get that guy over there to say yes, I'll do it." And this was just to be a guest spot, really, just to come on the program and have a presence, especially a Missouri legend, a legend in general, but a Missouri-born and bred legend. And the world's champion, and being associated with the NWA at that time, through Gordon with Howard Brody and Dennis Carluzzo and all those guys. Ed Schumann, Bill Behrens was there too. Harley said yes, and then the rest is sort of history. We made some fantastic television. Guys were coming in and sort of being amazed, which I thought was weird, but I have a production background. I really didn't know indie wrestling or non-televised wrestling too well. I was kind of naive at that, so I always had lights up in the sky, a whole rig, and microphones on cameras, and the microphones that were plugged into something, and you could hear people, and that, I guess, made me unique. But when Gordon passed away, I came home. Harley and BJ Race assumed the company, and they changed it to World League Wrestling, which is what it is today. But we had a fantastic run there in the late 90s, and working with those guys was just, it was an education like you'd never, it's a master's course that can't be taught. I have to be experienced. They taught me to smoke, they taught me to drink, they taught me to indulge, all the good stuff that you're supposed to learn as a young adult, but it was great to hang out with those older guys and just go through life and have a great time. But I learned a lot. I learned about formatting television and presenting wrestling as a broadcast, how to stack a live event that's being televised, all this stuff that people really learn for a 5 or 6 year period, I learned in a matter of minutes in reality. And then I would go and drive on the weekends to Randy Hale's Power Pro Wrestling in Memphis, or go down to Tunica, or drive all over the areas with Derek Stone and guys, Trevor Murdoch, started with me there. I gave him his first opportunity in Missouri, not Harley. And actually, Harley writes it in his book about the whole scenario. I got kind of heat for that for some reason in the book. I don't know how that came up, but I did, the way that it was expressed. And then referee John Cohn at the WWE, his first or second refereeing ever was for us in Springfield. A lot of great talent came out of there. We used Viscera and Sid Vicious and all kinds of folks. Tommy Rogers was on there a lot. And luckily through Harley's relationships, which got Ann Gordon's, so that got me sort of fast-passed, not to use a Disney term, but kind of fast-passed to the front of the line where I dealt with people in the front offices of WWE and WCW in Puerto Rico and whatever their territories because of their relationships and them giving me the endorsement, which I will never, ever forget. And to this day, I appreciate it like no other. But because of all that 15 years ago, I'm where I'm at today, I guess, good or bad.
He is David Marquez, NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood is the program. You can feel free to join us at 877-588-9877, option 1. If you're part of the Skype network, you can type in Sir Rockin' and he will take your call. We met at the NWA convention in 2005, and you handed me one of the most amazing-looking business cards I ever received, and it was because at the time you were representing a company that not many people even knew was an NWA. How did you come to work with the legendary Inoki New Japan Pro Wrestling Company, and what eventually led you to leave and become a part of the National Wrestling Alliance in a different aspect than you were at New Japan?
Well, that's a big, that's a hell of a timeline there of how that all went down. I was working for Bassman. This had to have been in 2001 maybe. And Bassman took me to I can't remember when the Inoki Dojo first opened because I wasn't there for the opening of it. I was just doing freelance wrestling work around the West Coast. And anyhow, I had a meeting with Simon Inoki, and Mr. Inoki was there. And a fellow by the name of Roger, who was their creative production guy. I always forget Roger's last name, and I apologize for that. Wonderful artist. He's the guy who actually invented Puma. The Puma character from head to toe was Roger. So at any rate, we're there, and I remember we were making a pitch for an event. You know, we were doing an event, and Bassman was doing an event, a larger event in Los Angeles, and they wanted the Inokis to get involved in Japanese involvement and whatnot, and I was there from a production standpoint. To cut to the chase, it was a very long meeting, a stereotypical Japanese-type meeting where they did a lot of nodding and made a lot of grunt sounds, and we did a big tap dance, and we left empty-handed. But a few weeks later, I was invited back to the dojo. I think Samoa Joe or Justin McCulley asked me to come in, who at the time was the head trainer there, Justin was. And so they asked me if I could help out raising some dollars for a production. And so they kind of gave me this title of, I think it was Director of Business Development or something like that, where I can do freelance work for them, and I'll make a piece of the action when it actually goes through. Unfortunately, I didn't make a dime because we couldn't sell anything. the dojo at that time was very exclusive, and you had to be invited to participate. And I believe when I got there, it was Justin McCulley, Samoa Joe, Brian Danielson, Bobby Quantz, Rocky Romero, Ricky Reyes, and a very, very young T.J. Perkins.
Oh, wow.
Very young. mid-teens, I would guess. But at any rate, late-teens, probably. But I get in there, and Simon and I strike up a pretty good friendship, and they invite me to do more and more, and then I am given a vice presidential title from Japan, where I became, I believe they called it a vice president of American or non-Japanese operations or something, or international operation, which is kind of funny because usually international here means outside the United States, but international to them was the United States or North America. So I had to go around and nurture relationships with Mexico, Europe, Canada, and then all over the U.S. And then at that time, I realized that Mr. Inoki was still a member of the NWA, and New Japan wasn't doing anything with it. And that's when our relationship with TNA was fresh, and I saw a hell of an opportunity there to create a synergy and negotiate new business and try to just foster a new relationship with Jerry and Jeff Jarrett. And things got easier, of course, when Terry Taylor was hired and became the talent relations person, because Terry and I had a relationship in the past. And I did everything, it seemed, at the LA Dojo. The biggest thing, I think, my biggest contribution to the LA Dojo was basically creating, and I hate saying this because it's kind of cliche, but it's the only way to explain it, an open door policy where anybody could come into the dojo and you did not have to be invited. And because of that, an awful lot of new talent was allowed to train. And I would schedule guest trainers like Jushin Liger and all kinds of other people. Muhammad Ali visited once because of his relationship with Mr. Inoki. I believe Mike Tyson may have popped his head in there once or twice, and then so on and so on. And so it just became a very special operation for a long while. And then as everything in pro wrestling, everything good has to come to an end, and some other influences got involved with the Inoki Dojo out of my control, and you know, they kind of couped power, and it was just time for us to move on. And during that time, actually, we being me, and a core group, Rocky Romero and Carl Anderson and some of the other leaders, if you want to call them that, of the dojo at the time, we decided it was time to leave. And when that happened, I petitioned California from the NWA, because I had already started promoting an arena event in Las Vegas at the Orleans Arena. And, you know, I wanted to promote it as an NWA event because I knew that we were going to draw pretty big by the card I put together. Had a lot of lucha on there and a couple of names and a lot of California and West Coast based guys. So, from a business standpoint, it made all the sense in the world to be a part of the NWA. So I paid the fee. Repaid the fee because I paid it once before in Missouri, in the mid-90s. But I rejoined the organization and started promoting on the West Coast as the NWA. And here we are 6 years later, I believe. We're pushing 7 years in October. I will be promoting NWA Pro Wrestling in California.
Wow. In our chat room, we have a question from Jersey Girl. Wanted to know, David, what were your thoughts when Wrestling Society X was canceled by MTV and not given a chance to succeed? You mentioned something to me in our private chat before we started. Explain your involvement in the project and then take her question, please.
Well, I wore all kinds of hats during that show. The ring they used was mine, so I was in charge of that. A lot of the pre-production, not the MTV side pre-production, the Big Vision Entertainment pre-production with Kevin and Houston Curtis and the rest of the production there, I was heavily involved, but I was actively involved, and I had a voice. I was the original director of the pilot. I was replaced, though, by MTV because they said that I wasn't the MTV style. And, you know, they're probably right, to be honest with you. I probably wasn't right for their vision. But Kevin wanted me to direct. So I was pulled from that, and then I ended up backseat directing. I can't remember the guy's name, but he was either a game show director or a talk show director they brought in. And I had it over his shoulder and knocked my head every time he pointed at a monitor. So virtually I was directing, but I wasn't saying anything. And at the same time, I was producing the announcers for the pilot. All those stories that you may hear about Vince McMahon being in people's ears while they're on the air, well, that's, I'm guessing, true, because that's what I did, and I produced the announcers for the pilot. And the series, too. For not really. The series, though, that was mostly done in post-production. But I didn't. I had nothing really to do with the creative. I had nothing to do with the cast, per se. That was all Kevin Kleinrock and his group of creative types for that show. I believe Cody Michaels was heavily involved in that. And I mostly was on the production end and not necessarily the creative or the wrestling end. I did some agent work, if you want to call it that, with Lizzie Valentine and Matt Seidel's stuff on the show and Sean Waltman's stuff on the show. The Lizzie Valentine sweater girl, I had a lot to do in the direction that that was going, and helped her ringside and what she should be doing as a valet, and then how her relationship with Seidel, what do they call him now? Evan Bourne.
Yeah, Evan Bourne.
How that would go together. So that was early on. And then when we actually did the series, and I believe it took almost a year before we did the series from the pilot.
Something like that, from what Kevin said.
Almost a year. We did the pilot in an abandoned brewery off the 5 freeway in Los Angeles. If you drive by it, there's this smokestack that sticks up that says a brewery. And it's actually like an artist compound or commune or whatever the word is, where a bunch of artists live together and grow and paint and stuff, I guess. But at any rate, that's where we shot the show. The theme of the show I had a lot to do with, with Kevin. The whole, actually, if you watch the Open Wrestling Society X, that's kind of a shout-out to Disney. When you're going down that hall, I designed that on paper with Kevin. And when they animated it and you got to the end where the guy slid the door open, that's basically from Roger Rabbit when the
group is
pretty valiant. Password, you know, as Walt sent me, and it sends you right in. So that's that's what that is. And us just, you know, trying to be creative and witty and whatnot. It was a fun time. I'm not going to say it wasn't a fun time. We had an awful lot of fun doing that show. And when we did the series, I was more involved in the office. I had a producer title, I think, a production coordinator title, I think, a talent relations title, I think.
Marty, you had a Lurie big business card, didn't you? Holy crap.
Well, we had a big conference room with a lot of paper everywhere, that's for sure. But it was really good working on that. Now, Colt Cabana actually says this to this day. None of us actually can take credit for Mac Classic. The name came from me, but the character spawned as a collective between Kevin, myself, and Cabana, because we had an idea that he'd be leaving to go to the WWE, and that's why he wasn't necessarily featured on television, and he was stuck on the internet at the MTV website as Matt Classic, which of course is probably the only character from that show that people talk about. So I had a lot of fun coming up with ideas. In fact, the socks, it's funny to say this, the socks that Cabana wears in there and the blue zip-up sweater are they're mine personally. Those are my personal effects. Before Cabana was going to go out to the ring for the first time as Matt Classic, I was just looking at him, and he was, you know, had the oil and the towel around his neck, and I was like, you know what? You're missing something. because at that point I was kind of not in the truck. I was sort of agent, gorilla, not gorilla, floor director, not floor director, producer, not producer on the floor. And we all wore a lot of hats during that show. And I ran to my car, which was about a half a block away from the studio. In fact, we shot that at the same studio that was the exterior of Maroon Cartoons and Roger Rabbit.
Get the heck out of here.
Little trivia there. And it was once Desilu. The stage, I believe, that we shot our show on was once the stage they shot I Love Lucy on, which is kind of cool.
Oh, that's amazing.
For TV geeks, that's kind of cool. But at any rate, I ran off. I gave it to Cabana. He looked at me like, what the hell is this Mr. Rogers sweater? And I said, no, just put it on. And he zipped it up and walked out, and he started doing duck squats and everything, and that classic was born.
Wow. This also came into our email box at Radio at
Orlando. There was a part two to that. I'm sorry. I guess there was the part two to that. Let me finish this thought.
Sure.
Don't let me interrupt you. To answer her question, what was my reaction to the program being canceled? There wasn't a reaction because I figured it was going to happen.
Wow.
The folks at the time, and I couldn't tell you their names at all, you know, these are the same guys putting on Sweet 16 and other reality shows that had to do with being greedy and selfish and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think to this day those guys realized that in their mind they were just getting a wrestling show, a half hour of TV show. And in our minds we were trying to start a wrestling company, a touring wrestling company with television. Imagine that. And the folks on the MTV side, I don't think that was ever their intention to get into that side of the world and the merchandise. Because, like, when I would sit there with the producers in between lunch or whatever, I'd have to use analogies like, well, you know, this is like Beavis and Butthead, or, you know, this is like Ren and Stimpy, or, you know, this is like Remote Control, where you, there's a reference, where you can merchandise this and send this out in Walmarts across the world and merchandise this and retail it and make collectibles and everything else. They didn't see it that way, I don't think, from the beginning. In fact, I think Kevin will agree with that if he talks to Kevin about it. You know, he was the closest to the project. This was his baby. He
was very vocal about it when we had him on, and his answers just made our listeners go, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, he and I shared an office. It was his office. I just kind of took over a chair in it for probably 4 years too long, staring across at him. And Kevin's office was always a great water cooler because we never knew what was going to happen or who was going to walk in or who was going to call or who was going to yell at us or whatever. It was a revolving door. One minute there's New Jack. Another minute there's Sandman. Another minute there's Raven. Oh, here's RVD. Oh, oh no, that guy has a gun, you know? you never really knew what was going to happen at any office Kevin had. But I was not, to be very frank, I was not shocked when I heard the program was canceled. In fact, it ran far too many episodes before I thought they'd cancel us. I thought we'd be off the air by the first show.
Yeah. As I was saying before I interrupted you, and I apologize, this question came into our email box at radioandonlinewellerwrestling.com a couple times. What was your role in the NWA separating from TNA Wrestling in 2007? Was it you? Was it Bob Trubich? Was it the board itself? Take us into the creative idea of leaving TNA Wrestling as a group. Because from 2002 to 2007, you tuned into their programming, and it was the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, the World Tag Team Champions, the World X Division Champion. Take us into that area.
Well, I have not really commented about this, and I'm not going to go into it really because it was a legal situation and it's not fair to either party. We did settle it and we both moved on. But here's the nickel tour. In the beginning with Jeff and Jerry Jarrett, the intent was to promote NWA TNA Wrestling as such, where it was a national promotion and you needed the network of promoters, no matter how big or small, to run a company. And that was the intent, from what I can tell. You know, as the relationship continued and they left, I believe, Huntsville to Nashville to Orlando, going from pay-per-view to Fox Sports. And if you look at the timeline out there, if you do the research, you'll see the NWA name disappearing from the broadcast and the, you know, the ring skirts and the camera crews and the flags that they were flying and, you know, the set pieces, the mic flags, all that stuff. All the NWA branding was disappearing. Well, that alarmed me because that was part of the reason why I decided that I wanted to join the organization. And from a New Japan standpoint, I was trying to promote the NWA in Japan through New Japan and you know, and get TNA guys over there and our guys over here, because if, you know, people remember, you have to be really astute, pay close attention, but many times when the New Japan talents were on the TNA program, I was not that far behind them, or I was sitting in a chair ringside, or I think...
Or next to me.
Yeah, that's right. I sat next to you many times there. Or I was in the truck with Terry Taylor. I was somewhere else, but I was always there and accompanying the New Japan talent and nurturing that relationship. But I just felt that it was just not working, and, you know, there were rules, I don't want people to think the NWA, they're rules, you know, they're all about rules. The agreement that we made with TNA, and then the new owners and the new management felt that the NWA name wasn't necessarily what they wanted to promote, even though they were contractually obligated to. It just started making things difficult, I believe, at least in my mind, as now whether I was a proxy to the organization through New Japan or an actual full-fledged member, I didn't feel that the investment that I was making or was going to make in the organization and the brand, in what I was planning on doing, would work with TNA, because they were making, decisions that would affect the rest of the NWA as a operation. For example, if you're hiring a talent like AJ Styles as the NWA World's Champion, that's pretty economical for an NWA promoter. When you make Sting your World's Champion, I don't know who could necessarily afford to pay Sting for a house show appearance if he were to agree to make the appearance. So from a business standpoint, it was becoming more difficult to promote your own intellectual property. You know, the TNA, right. I will say this for the record. TNA never owned the NWA name. TNA never owned the NWA championships. It was a licensing agreement. They paid every month to use our brand, our logo, and our intellectual property. That was it. They never owned anything. Nor did they quit on us. It was us who pulled out from them. And I want to make that very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much convoluted thoughts and rumor and the internet and all that, of what actually happened and who owned what and whatever, but those are facts. They never owned us. They never owned the logo. I mean, look, if you go do a U.S. trademark and patent search for NWA Wrestling, I believe, National Wrestling Alliance, and our logo, you'll see that the registered trademark owner is Pro Wrestling Organization, LLC, which is the parent company to the National Wrestling Alliance. And, you know, if I may take a step back to try to clear some things up, I don't know how many listeners you have, but since this is the internet, everybody seems to find things out one way or another. When it comes to WCW, to the ECW side of things, you know, everybody wants to say that the NWA died when Ric Flair went to the WWE with the world's title and WCW stopped promoting the NWA side. It's much like the TNA arrangement. Well, the organization still went on, and yeah, Shane Douglas threw down the world title to establish what ECW became. But Dennis Carluzzo and Ken Taylor and Bill Behrens and Ed Schumann and a lot of other great folks kept promoting events as the National Wrestling Alliance. Doug Gilbert, I mean, there's tons of people that we can name off and list who kept this thing going all these years and didn't go anywhere. Now, the size and the magnitude may not be as large as a Jim Crockett Promotions or a Turner Broadcasting, but the organization's still here, and after, 63 years, we're still going. Same company, same belt, same lineage, and it's always interesting to me that both the WCW and the WWE likes to borrow from our history, So
all the time.
Anyway, just wanted to put that down on the records.
He is David Marquez, NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood on KDOC-TV on the 17th at 11 p.m. and will appear
weekly. It's 8 o'clock, not 11, I'm sorry. 8 o'clock on
it's 8 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Eastern. I'm sorry, I've got my time mixed up. That's right, because Adam Pearce mentioned that you guys are taking the place of SmackDown. He mentioned... he mentioned that this has been a dream project of yours as long as he has been associated with you.
Yeah.
What is it about this concept of having the show done on KDOC, done at the Galaxy Theater? What is it? I'm dying to know. The fans are dying to know.
Well, it's only a dream project per se, to actually get somebody to understand what you're selling. A lot of people don't understand what I do, really. And the public, and I rarely say things like this, but from a public perception, I rarely go out there and say that I'm the owner, I'm the president, I'm the whatever, producer, executive producer, I try to maintain a balance of my on-air when I am on camera as the guy holding the microphone and the guy sitting behind the desk giving you information and news or whatever I might be doing. I still feel that there needs to be that window, that wall between the operation, and even though I'm talking about it now, but I didn't believe this, there should be a wall there where there's fantasy involved, where if there's an interview or if there's an emergency ringside for whatever reason and I come out with a camera crew, that the perception is this is important, not there's the owner of the company staring at a situation or this is a tactic or whatever. So to me, make-believe is very important. Why would you really want to go to Disneyland and tell your child that there's a 4'9" person standing in Mickey Mouse? No, not at all. So why ruin illusions, per se?
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to KDOC, and it doesn't matter if it's KDOC or if it's a station in another market, this isn't the first time we've had television. I've produced local television on probably about 25 stations around the country. They didn't last for whatever reason, usually because of sponsors' involvement and them pulling out. Not because the show was doing well. Excuse me, guys. I'm lost here. Not because the show wasn't doing well. It was all because that the sponsors didn't understand what they had or where we were going, and they didn't understand the concept of... It's very difficult to get mainstream industry to understand a television series that ends up in a live event where everybody makes money. you can't put, there are no collateral to dreams, and that was a Walt Disney phrase, that you can't put anything up against an idea. All you have to do is trust it. So when you have a group of people like KDOC now who understands where this can go, and how the operation can move and how the station can be involved in the overall success financially, then it makes everything a lot easier. So to me, anybody can put a ring up, anybody can make phone calls, anybody can, ring a bell and perform for 3 hours. I've been doing pro wrestling now, involved in the business for 22 years, and I've seen a lot, and having longevity and a good name like I fortunately still have, the one thing that's missing to me is a long-standing broadcast. Now, we had it in Missouri with World Legion Wrestling. We've enjoyed it with the couple of incarnations of of NWA Wrestling Showcase out here from the West Coast, no matter what the distribution was. But in reality, all of that was a dress rehearsal to what we're getting ready to do now. And having the station behind this is something that we've not necessarily enjoyed, because whether it's a paid programming situation or the station doesn't want to get involved because they don't understand it, here KDOC is our partner, and they understand it, and they understand the fact that a major popular pro wrestling program will be leaving the market on October 1st from our My Network affiliate here, KCOP in Los Angeles, Channel 13, and that there's a chance that a percentage, probably a small percentage, of that broadcast viewing audience, while flipping around on the 1st, will find us. So that's our goal, is to just try to grab some audience. Ratings are important, and we are in the second largest television market in the United States. We are on during prime time up against ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CW, and My Network, I guess. And plus, in this town, we have Telemundo and Korean channels, and there's an awful lot of different type of broadcasting and diversity here in town, so it's going to take a lot from us to actually grab an audience. But luckily, KDOC understands what we're trying to do. So I guess to try to answer your question the best possible is that it's not a passion project. It's a have to do. I have to get this show on the air because I've had so many jump starts, and it's always been in other people's hands the fate of the program. Now I get to work with an operation who understands where the map is going and where the roads are going, and they understand that it might take 2 or 3 years to draw the audience that we might need, or the sponsors that we might need to keep this going at this level.
As opposed to MTV, you pulled the plug on Lucha Libre USA after 7 episodes, at least. It seems like, from what I've read on paper, these people have faith in you and aren't freaking out. Okay, 2nd episode, oh my God, there's not enough people, what do we do?
Yeah. One of the great things about a station like KDOC, now KDOC, so you guys understand what KDOC is, if you don't live in the Los Angeles market. KDOC is an independent television station who runs mostly syndicated programming, and they are just now opening programming blocks up for local television, local programming. So NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood is just that. It is local programming in the same vein that Georgia Championship Wrestling was to Channel 17 in Atlanta. But Channel 17 in Atlanta ended up on a satellite and then cable and became Superstation TBS. So, but it was still Channel 17 in Atlanta. Or right. WGN9 Chicago ended up being Superstation WGN around the country. That's where the discrepancies come in about national promotion of the NWA. See, the NWA never has been, nor will it be, I don't think in the future, a national promotion. It is regional by design, and it needs to stay that way. So with that said, you know, we're concentrating on Southern California to make this work the best we can. We're not trying to be a national promotion because we have national partners with our other NWA member promotions. Some have higher budgets than others. Some have a higher, better experience than others. But luckily right now, we're all kind of talking to each other and working with each other on how to use our intellectual property and our branding the right way, and I think with Adam Pearce as our world champion, we've been able to do that. It's been a long 4 years right now since our separation from TNA. It's only been 4 years, but I think we've done an awful lot with it in that 4 years. With KDOC, it's a fantastic opportunity to try to do something that's not being done really anywhere else in the country. We're a television, a local tele that I know of, that a local television station in a major market is partnering with an unproven product. And we're going in it together to try to make it a success during a time slot in a town that we know enjoys pro wrestling, because in Los Angeles, from the last numbers I saw, at least from a couple weeks ago, SmackDown got in the Los Angeles market somewhere around, and granted, SummerSlam was just here, so I'm sure it was a little more popular and people, fresh in people's minds. It was a little over 200,000 viewers for that Friday night.
Wow.
So, and that's just in Los Angeles. So, if we can get a fraction of that on KDOC, well, then we're a success, but it takes the people to watch us. And it also takes us to get the word out, too, you know, and we're limited in budgets, and the station's limited in what they can do because of their budgets, and so it's grassroots, it's regional, it looks regional, it has a regional feel, but that's what I think makes it special.
Yep, the program is going to be on this Friday night, as David corrected me. I'm very happy he did that. 8 p.m. Pacific time, and I believe you had mentioned it will be available on the NWAHollywood.com, or is that not going to happen?
No, it will happen. It will be put on. I don't know how long of a process that takes, that Webmaster does all that stuff. I mean, they're going to be produced in advance. I mean, they're all done now, so he may even have them. I'm not sure. But it airs Friday nights at 8, and then there's a rerun Saturday nights at 11. So you have two opportunities to catch it on broadcast. We're really looking forward to it. I think that we have something special here. If everybody could keep their head straight and figure out what the goal, ultimate goal is, I know what my ultimate goal is. I just got to figure out if KDOC understands what their goal is, and I know that it's sponsors and from what I know and other things like that. But they're fantastic guys down there. Got the working relationship with them so far.
He is David Marquez. You can find him on Facebook by looking for David Marquez. I believe your Twitter is NWA Marquez. Did I get that right?
It is.
I'm not cool enough to Twitter. And Kenny King told me I can't. He said to me, he was on a few weeks ago, and they've been trying, the guys in this network have been trying to get me to get one. And Kenny was like, no, because nobody's going to care about, you know, if you had a Coke Zero this morning, or your neighbor has three cats or something like that. But we appreciate you being here with us tonight. It is NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Thank you so much for taking time for us.
Pretty cool, man. I do appreciate being on. And there's one other thing that I wanted to mention, if I could. I don't know if Adam talked about this, but myself, Adam, and Andy Schmitz in our office is going to Wisconsin for, I dare call it a tryout, but it's at least a seminar coming up. If you go to, I think it's crushpro.com, probably messing that up, where we'll be evaluating talent and whatnot. I got a text here to say, don't forget to mention this, so I'm mentioning it.
Oh, good. No, Adam did not mention that, so please do.
Okay, well, it's PW Crush with a K, PWKRUSH.com. They're an NWA affiliate out of the Midwest. And Adam, myself, and Andy Schmitz, who is, for lack of a better term, our talent relations person, if you're a pro wrestler out there, we will be having a seminar, a television seminar, because Pro Wrestling Crush, NWA Pro Wrestling Crush, just secured a time slot Friday nights themselves on Milwaukee's Channel 18 WVTV, and so we're helping them, and they're getting their launch off and trying to find some talent for them too that understand what it takes to perform on television. So once again, that's PW Crush with a K, KRUSH.com, NWAMidwest.com, or NWAWrestling.com. All those areas should have the news if you wanted to come out and participate. And that is October 9th.
And I believe the website, the flyers on your, I saw it on the Sheik's Facebook. Your next taping is October 6th at Galaxy?
October 6th, yeah. We shoot on Wednesdays at the Galaxy Theater.
All right. If you're in L.A., you don't need a headshot to get into this one, right? The Wrestling Society X fans may remember. You don't need a headshot to be in the audience, right? Because I got mine ready, man, if I need it.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, though. I mean, that was interesting to see, because I think we made a lot of pro wrestling fans, you know, there, that weren't fans, that were, you know, paid extras, that ended up leaving with a different perception of what pro wrestling was by the end of those tapings.
All righty. He is Kevin Kleinrock. We're going to let him go ahead and enjoy the rest of his evening. Thanks for coming on. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you. He is Kevin. He is David Marquez, Kevin Kleinrock. We've had on the show before. Speaks very highly of that gentleman. So we're honored that not only did we get to get some interesting stories for the fans, and hopefully Jersey Girl, our friend Amy, got her answer to her question there. This just into the news desk. Big shock, kid. Sean Waltman arrested.
No way. Over...
Shocking, isn't it?
Totally shocking. Sean Waltman arrested. What's next?
Yeah, well,
Scott Hall in rehab?
Yeah, Scott Hall rehab, Kevin Nash pouting like a schoolgirl. Let's get to that real quick here. If we could find, I got it. Just got an email on it from the home office in Wahoo, Nebraska. Come on, scroll, damn you. Here it is. Something about WWE. WWE held a casting call today in Las Vegas, and they were looking for new girls. Former Playboy playmate Tiffany Selby was among those auditioning. Cool, yeah, great way to go there. Ezekiel Jackson returned to the ring last night, finally, after being out since April with a knee injury. We're good luck to him there. Yep, there it is. Sean Waltman was arrested and charged with CDS possession Sunday while passing through New Jersey. He was busted by Port Authority police at the Newark airport, who processed him before eventually releasing him without bail. Best wishes and congrats to our buddy Kenny King. He has signed a deal to become a member of ROH. I believe he had an extension on his deal. Kyle O'Reilly, who's been there for a while, also signed. Combat Zone Wrestling, believe it or not, is reportedly signing some of their regularly used talent to non-exclusive agreements. If you don't know what that means, definitely look them up. If you've been wondering, where's Desmond Wolfe? Well, he's sidelined right now as a precaution with an undisclosed medical issue. We didn't get to mention this Thursday night. Definitely watch Impact as they start their march to Bound for Glory, and hopefully we won't have to sit through another spin cycle like they had on the air. Ugh.
So you mean Impact's actually on this Thursday?
Yeah, they're actually on this Thursday. And tell, check this out. Rock mentioned this before we were going to bring it up. Last night, Monday Night Raw did a 3.0 rating and averaged 4.4 million viewers. That's pretty good considering the two games that Monday Night Football had, the Jets and the, Baltimore Ravens. Damn you. God, that was get a first down, damn it, God. There's Pee Wee football coaches that are going, you see that little marker? After the, we're at 10 here, you want to get to the 20. And then, San Diego, Kansas City, they did a 10.9 and an 8.8 respectively. So you gotta wonder, fans, what would have TNA have done? Rock, the answer would be, in your mind?
0.0.
Yes, that's a very scary thought. And, We'll get to more of the fun stuff. A lot of fun. Adam Pearce was very gracious with his time for us. We do apologize for the pre-taping issue, but I'm a parent. He's a parent. Kids come first sometimes. Fortunately, mine are sleeping. I'm on East Coast, so I don't have to deal with my child being up right now at 9:21 Pacific. And thanks to everyone for being in the room tonight at wildtalkradio.com and owradio.com. They link together as always. Thanks to Spug for stopping by, Tim Stein for stopping by, my friend Mike Ligori for stopping by, David Marquez for an education in the world of professional wrestling. As everybody knows from being here, Keeks and our friends from overseas know, and they're the ones that set up a Friends of Wild Talk Radio. You can check wildtalkradio.com. If you're on Facebook, Wild Talk Radio has a Facebook page. We're sponsored by Click Wrestle, which is the number one download site for matches. And as mentioned, there will be some promotional information available for that soon. You can go to clickwrestle.com. Tomorrow night is a Talk to Talk Live with the Spug Guy, Mace, and the end-all, be-all of the WTR Network, the Omega. Thursday night is
not anything goes. It's DJ Sorokin this Thursday night.
Oh, she's busy.
She has work.
Oh, it's her night to torture the residents of Winnipeg, Canada. Friday night, who's spinning the tunage? Is it you or is it DJ Steinman?
Most likely DJ Stein on Friday, and Saturday I think we're having a special DJ.
So no CB, or there will
no,
be CB?
No, CB's going to be after that, but we might have a special DJ before CB Radio.
Ah.
Which is at midnight-ish CB Radio.
Yeah, it's not me, kids, because I don't DJ. I don't have the computer capacity to do it. If you live in the Tampa area, you want to hang out with me Friday night, ASW All-Stars Wrestling, aswflorida.com. The finals of the number one contender tournament to face the champion Alex Decay at ASW Slambury, which will be the 24th. Simon Says, the former champ, taking on Raging Bull Eddie Torres, also a former champ, 8 p.m. If you come in by 7 o'clock, you can play pool for free, and there's 2-1 drink specials. Like I said, ASWFlorida.com. I'm affiliated with them, doing backstage post-show interviews that are going to be affiliated with the site. Don't have a format yet set for Subway. Hasn't given you a format, and that was pretty cool, dude. All of a sudden, it's like your listeners probably Saturday must have been going, "We tuned in for CB Radio. We got the damn wrestling stuff again. What the heck?"
No, we do plenty of wrestling stuff on CB Radio, and we haven't kind of talked yet. But any suggestions? Go to the Facebook. Go to my Facebook, facebook.com/StartRockin. Leave us suggestions. Where were you when? That's what we're looking for. And we'll discuss
exactly.
It on CB Radio. And the Godfather of Extreme most likely will be returning this Saturday night.
Excellent. And as mentioned earlier, Mace not here. Job interview. We're very happy for him. Hopefully he gets the position. I believe it's Prime Minister of Australia. We're not under. He kind of hinted at that, or at something possibly running the government. We can bring them up here too if we want, get the Tea Party out of this godforsaken country. Him, the Omega, Will, I believe, was back on this Sunday, so that'll be a full house. The Spud Guy, Tim Stein, myself, Sorokin, this Sunday, 11 p.m., after we get to sit through Night of Champions.
Woohoo!
Brought to you by the folks of Stanford, Connecticut, and World Wrestling Entertainment. You guys twit. What's the OW? Is there a twit for you guys? Is it Wild Talk Radio? What's your twit?
Twitter.com/Wild Talk Radio. Keep up to date on all things Wild Talk Radio.
Yep, the big boss, Brad Dykens, Jason Dedrich, do Twitter.com in big letters, OWWCOM. Definitely check them out. This has been a lot of fun with Springsteen Night. There's a couple others coming. There will be a Billy Joel night. There will be a Beatles night, but I'm not 100% sure how I'm going to work that yet. There may or may not be a Sarah McLachlan night. Depends on the lady. If I get a Lilith Fair-like event going here, I don't kid. This is the place to be every Tuesday night because you never know what interview is going to show up. There are some in the works with some former TNA and WWE talent that I'm not going to go into right now. The most played song from the Springsteen library is one that in a 60 Minutes interview they did on the band a couple of years ago, they asked little Stevie Van Zandt, MX, the drummer who used to be a part of Conan O'Brien's band, "Do you guys ever get tired of playing this damn song?" And Lil Stevie was like, "I don't think we've ever played it right before." From the album of the same name, it's the legendary Born to Run, allinworldofwrestlingradio.com, owradio.com. Thank you so much for letting me come into your residence, and we'll do it again next Tuesday. Take care.
It's a suicide rap, we gotta get up. Just wrap your legs around these velvet rims and strap your head.